Lynette, can you hear me? Lynette. Okay. Hi, Mana, can you hear me? Not sure. They can't hear me. Hi, guys. Can you hear me?
Aloha, Leslie. Yes, I can hear you.
Oh, good. Oh, my goodness. I thought, oh, something happened to my audio. Thanks, Mana, for confirming.
No problem. That happens to me almost every other meeting I'm in.
Oh, my God. First time it happened. It kind of gets you all excited, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, I'm letting everyone in. Mahalo.
Bye.
Aloha, kamanao.
Aloha, anoai me ke aloha. There's only 5 participants today.
Oh, no, there'll be 7. The one computer crashed this morning, half an hour ago, and so I'm using another computer. So I'm letting 15 people more in right now.
Okay.
Aloha kamanao.
Aloha, Dan.
Aloha, everybody.
Aloha.
Congratulations. Aloha, Mana. I changed my view here. Wow. Aloha, everyone.
Let's see, we're expecting more council members.
Yeah, let me just double check who we're missing. There's also a guest with a number, so I'm not sure who that is. If that's a council member, please let us know. Diane is on twice. Okay, so we're waiting for 3 more people. Oh, here's Brickwood. So 2 more people. We have quorum right now, but we're waiting for 2.
Okay. Yeah, let's get started. Aloha, Brickwood. Ano ai miki aloha. O ano o kamana olana mil ke po o kia kia ahahui kapi ia o ka Oahu Island Burial Council. So, calling to order the meeting of the Oahu Island Burial Council scheduled for Wednesday, August 11, 2021 at 10 a.m. via Zoom meeting. Let's see, who can I ask? In fact, I'll do the pule for today, the pule kako. E kia kua mana loa ka loko kalani, mahalo no kia la a mako e ho akua ko ai, ku ka kamilia e peli ana i na mea koi koi o na iwi kupuna o ko kako ma poe. A ke olo olo kauko pompa i ka imaluna a mako a pau loa. I loko ka inoa Yesu Christo, amene. Okay. And we will do a roll call, and we will start with mana kateres.
Hello, Akayakayaka Ko, Uva o mana kalilene kateres. I am representing the geographic region of Eva. Aloha.
Aloha, Diane.
Aloha, Kakayaka, Diane. Wanani Fitzsimmons, I am representing the Moku of Waialua.
Mahalo nui. Brickwood.
Aloha kakayaka kako, can you hear me okay? Okay, I represent Kola Poko. Aloha.
Aloha no. Lynette.
Aloha, this is Lynette Cruz representing Waianae. Morning.
Good morning. And I'm looking to see if there's any other council members. Leslie, did I miss anybody?
Yes, Nanea is here.
Oh, aloha. Nanea?
Aloha.
Okay, and so we are missing Chuck.
Right. Correct. I'm wondering if the guest ID, is that him or not?
Chuck, are you there?
Okay, maybe not.
Okay. Okay. Next up on the agenda is announcement. Our next meeting date is scheduled for September 8, 2021 via Zoom at 10 o'clock a.m. Does any of the council members have any problems with that date and time?
It's good for me.
I got you. So that will be our next meeting on September 8th. Mahalo nui. Next up on the agenda, we have the minutes. And taking a look at my notes from my to-do list from last month, one of the things I believe the community and the council both agreed on was that the minutes be recorded in a way that was more synopsis than it was verbatim, and that the videos will be made available on the SHPD website. And I know SHPD was working to get those videos up online with their IT department. But Leslie, were you able to change the minutes to synopsis style?
Aloha, it's Leslie. At this moment, I'm going through it and changing them accordingly. When I'm finished, I'll be sending them back out to everyone.
Okay. Mahalo nui. And so the minutes, chances are it won't be available to approve today, or we'll have to wait till September.
Correct. It might even be longer because they're 26, 30 pages long. And so I have to go through each one to make sure I have the accurate and take everything out. Get them approved on my side and then send them over. So it might even be longer than September. Just to let you know, I'll keep you updated though, as each month is finished, I'll present it to you.
Mahalo. Okay, thank you. Mahalo nui. Okay. Council members, any questions so far?
I have a comment question. I was wondering, the minutes online, is it possible to put a watermark, just a watermark stamp on the draft rather than it's just right now typed on the very top? And I don't know if it's not really obvious that it's a draft in the time being, just because it's going to be taking so much time. So is it possible to either put a draft stamp on it or watermark it with draft?
Aloha, it's Leslie. Yeah, most of them have the draft stamp on it. Those that do not, I'll go back over and put that there. Mahalo.
Mahalo. Mahalo, Leslie.
Yeah, mahalo, gang. Okay. Moving forward on the agenda, we're at item.
On the minutes, since many of us weren't here when the actions were taken, would we assume that all actions were legally correct and in the proper form? And how would we know this? Do we need opinion? I for one want to make sure that something that I vote on as a council member was legal when it was done. Anybody have any response to that?
Could you repeat your question again very quick? I'm sorry.
I'd like to know that all actions that were taken during these meetings were legal and in proper form, so that when I, for one, vote on something as important as minutes, because they determine the authority of the council and decisions that are made that affect our Iwi Kupuna and the community, that they were legal and done in the proper form. So how do we guarantee that?
I'm not sure how to guarantee it, but as far as I can go anecdotally based on my opinion. Okay. In the past with, the council, we have the ability to approve like lineal descendancy recognition, cultural descendancy recognitions. And in the case of previously identified burials, is approving the burial treatment plan, and as well as preservation in place or relocation of human remains. And so given that, I don't know if any of our decisions made were not legal. I'm sure a lot of our decisions create controversy, but to say whether it's legal or not, I'm at the position that all the decisions I made in the council were legal.
The AG was not at many of these meetings, correct?
Yes, that's correct.
So there was no way to lean on council for decision making. Yeah, I just want to be really clear, because I'll be deciding on minutes just for myself, but I want to be really clear that the decisions that were made by the council at that time were guided simply by the councils and not leaning on any type of legal or parliamentarian type of guidance, right?
That's correct. Okay. I think as part of the reasons why we are changing it from verbatim type minutes to synopsis type minutes. So that way, if there's any kind of personal issues, that they not be recorded in the state's minutes, that basically what should be recorded in the state's minutes are the things that pertain to burials and things that pertains to what's in our jurisdiction. And yeah, so thank you for that.
I appreciate it. Thank you.
Yeah. Council Brickwood. Any other questions before we move further? Hearing none, we're moving on to item 5, business. Cultural descendancy recognition application for Kalehua Kamohali Ikateres and Ohana to unidentified human skeletal remains found at Alder Street Project, located at 902 Alder Street, Honolulu, Ka'ahupua'a o Honolulu, Kamokuokona, Kamokupuni o Oahu, TMK, Kahilua Kolu, Ole Kahilua, Umi Kumama, Kumama Iva. The council may elect to go into closed session pursuant to HR 13325. The council may close the meeting whenever a location of description of Native Hawaiian burial sites is under consideration. The chairperson, by concurrence of a majority of members present at the meeting, shall be authorized to require the public to leave the meeting while confidential matter is being discussed, and reopen the meeting once the confidential matter is no longer being considered. With that said, Kalihua, before we call you forward, are you okay with this section being an open session, or would you like a closed session to talk?
I'm open to an open session at this time.
My kai. I'm taking a look at the recommendation from SHPD right now. And it says, in this particular case, they are recommending a cultural descendancy recognition. And because you, as the applicant, has demonstrated a connection to an ancestor who once resided in the Ahupua'a of Honolulu. And so the family members being considered for cultural descendancy recognition is Brandy Kalihua Kamo'oli'i Kateres, Norman Mana Kalilani Kateres, Kekama Ma Kua'a Ka'iliho Kalilani Kamo'oli'i Kateres, I'm going to butcher the name. Kekama Ehu O Kahi kiku ki e ki e kahana ni oku o ku'u lei lehua kamohali i kateres. Ke kama ke ua kau i ikuha oikala i kalehua ki e hie kamohali i kateres. Kahua kau o ke kama a kau vai kamana o ka I apologize for my mispronunciations. So with that said, Brandy, what would you like to address the council for your cultural descendancy recognition?
Aloha, Chair. This is Mana. My apologies. I should have stated this prior. It kind of rolled into this recognition quite quickly, but I will be recusing myself since my wife is the applicant and I am named in the application. Aloha.
Mahalo nui.
Beli na mai me ke aloha ya kako apau. He wahi leo aloha kea I nga moho hou o nga moku o ahu nei. My name is Kalihua Kamohali Ika Teres. My family has been actively participating as a family for maybe about 10 years now. And we appreciate your consideration of our application. What I can say is that we are a single household, we are a single family, and we have been consistently participating in YBC meetings, consultations, reburial practices, and we kindly ask that you approve our application in order to continue to allow us to awamo our koleana. Mahalo nui. Oye hola.
Mahalo nui. Council members, any questions?
I have a question, Chair, and perhaps this can wait for the part of the agenda where we get into rules or responsibilities, but just because I would like to know whether any of the applicants are paid consultants of this particular project.
So we have our own consultant business. And so the project is one that we are contracted to. So the answer would be yes, as a family business, correct.
Chair, thank you for that, Mahalo. Chair, do we have any AG here? I'd like to ask if that is legal. I guess it would be legal if it's been going on for a while, but I would just like to get the opinion of the AG. Is the AG here?
Leslie, are there any AGs that could make it to today's meeting?
They said that they would be here. However, I don't see any on the video, but yeah, they did say they'd make it to the first hour. I'll shoot them an email to see if they can join us quickly. Mahalo.
Mahalo.
Chair, may I continue? This is more of a question for Leslie. Is this a common practice where we have cultural or maybe even lineal consultants who are paid, lineal descendants rather, who are paid consultants for the projects that they're applying for?
Aloha, it's Leslie. All I can offer, and I'm not an attorney, so I don't come from that side of it, but all I can offer is that yes, this does happen, and it is common, and that's all I can offer at this time.
It's common. Okay, and that's based on not a legal opinion, but I have a problem if it's common practice that anyone holding descendancy would also have a consultancy contract with the project that they are a descendant of. That is my concern, Mr. Chair. And so I'm not sure how we can go forward. And I'm not looking to gum up the works here. I just want some questions answered.
Mahalo nui. So I would respectfully defer to whatever decision is made amongst the council members. But what I can tell you is I know for a fact that this has been happening long before our family started our consultancy business and continues to occur, not just with this descendancy. So I would ask that if, you know, whoever makes that decision, we definitely have no problems, because my perspective is we manage that ethically, professionally, and with respect to our cultural practice above and beyond all things, above and beyond. So for us, we come forward as descendants because it's a systemic kind of criteria, and that sometimes others use that opportunity to weaponize and to prevent cultural practitioners from doing cultural practices. And so we come before the council for that reason and that reason only. I am fine with whatever the decision is made, because at the end of the day, we go malama ivi kupuna, no matter what. So this is really a formality for us. So we respectfully address your concern, and I would love to hear what the responses are. I would also like to understand how that affects all the other cultural descendants who have consultation firms,
right,
that are in this audience or have been, and how that affects all the decisions that have already been made and all of the decisions that occur going forward. So all I ask is that this not be indiscriminately addressed to this family, Ohana Caceres, but rather becomes an understood practice as it applies to every person that comes before this council. So that would be the only thing that I would ask, because for me, it very much becomes about what is kono. So mahalo nui e Brickwood for your questions and concerns. I absolutely think they're valid. But for us, our practices to malama preclude our consultation business. So mahalo nui.
Yeah. Chair, may I respond?
Sure.
Well, I appreciate that. And I certainly appreciate, what you folks do as a family to Malama or Ibi Kupuna. I truly want this question answered I think it should be a full transparency. Otherwise, it becomes if it's been going on for a long time and it's been allowed to go on a long time, then sometimes you forget that it may not be right. So I'm looking for a legal opinion on this. I'm looking for an ethical opinion on this. And as we move forward, maybe we can establish some solid ground rules on how this thing works. And that's what I'm seeking to do. Now, I'm not looking to be a crow on anybody's side. I just would want this to be Pono. We're talking about Pono? Okay. Yes. So if it, you know, if today is not the day, today is not the day. But that's my question as a council member. I would like that answer. Mahalo.
Mahalo. Other council members? Any other council members with Manao? No Manao. Okay. Just my Manao ha'aha'a wale no. I understand your concern, Brickwood. I'm actually on the fence with this one because whether this is just my own personal Manao. When it comes to a lineal or cultural descendancy recognition, that's like the epitome, the top things we can do for Ohana. And even if you, in my opinion, if you own a consulting business, that does not take away the fact that that's your Ohana. And you still have that responsibility to take care of Iwi Kupuna. In fact, it's like a double burden. It's a double, you're taking on even more kuleana than what's assigned. And so with that, Ahia oko iki kaya ulu, Manao from the public. Is there anyone from the public who has Manao on this matter? Hearing none, I will entertain a motion. A motion to either defer or a motion to approve the cultural descendancy recognition. Does the council have any, would like to, I'll entertain a motion at this time.
Aloha, this is Lynette. I move to approve.
It's a motion to approve. Is there a second?
I second.
And moved and second, is there any discussion?
I'm going to Kanalua on this one because I really want the answer. And I'll stay on it with this council moving forward. If we got to redefine, and furthermore, I'm pleased that there is attention being given in legislative discussion. Because if this got to go back to the statute itself, redefining what this means, then so be it. But this question has been gone too long unanswered. So that's why in this particular case, I'm going to Kanalua.
Okay. And you know what? Quickly, what I'm going to do is I'm going to add this to my to-do list to culturally. It's been moved and seconded. All in favor say aye.
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 Okay. Are there any opposed? Kanalua?
Kanalua.
Second pass, Kanalua?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay. Mahalo nui. The motion has passed.
Mahalo nui. Aloha. Ila mai ka ino oko.
Ila mai ka i. Okay, next up on the agenda. Oh, and let the record reflect that Chuck Airhorn is present. And we're back to our main agenda.
I'm sorry I was late. I had an unexpected doctor's appointment.
Not a problem. Good to see you here. Next up on the agenda, we have update on the Kuhio Avenue and Kaiulani Avenue Water System Improvement Projects, Kahupua'a Waikiki, Kamoku'o Honolulu, Kamokupuni o Oahu, TNK, Kahilua Ono, Ole Ole Lima, Ole Ole Ono, Umi Kuma Lima, to Iwa Kalua Kumaiwa and Kuhio Avenue and Kaiulani Avenue rights of way. So updated project can be given by Cultural Survey Hawaii by Matt McDermott.
Aloha, Council. This is Alani Apio of the Board of Water Supply. Aloha, Chair. I will be giving the introduction if that's okay.
Okay.
Aloha, Alani.
Aloha to council members and the audience at hand. I think almost all of the council members I've known at one time or another in either through the council or with Brickwood through different ways. I think Nanea is the only person that I don't know. So aloha to you all, and thank you for this opportunity to present to you folks. This is kind of complicated and convoluted in the context of the current burial laws. So please bear with me as I try to set the context for both of these projects. There's three projects that we're presenting Board of Water Supply this morning. The Kuhio and Ala Moana Boulevard projects are similar in their reasons for our presenting. And then the Kalae Loa desalinization plant afterwards is separate and different for the reasons presenting. Okay, so if at any time the council members have a question, I'm going to assume that Leslie will let me know vis-a-vis any hand raising. So with that, I'm gonna go back to how the current laws, both 6E and the internal administrative laws of SHPD operate, so that you can understand why we're coming to you now on these two projects. So with the Kuhio Kaiulani Avenue project, the reason for this goes back quite a few years ago to the earlier 2010s, when the Board of Water Supply was doing the initial design work for a project out in Waianae along Old Government Road. Now, many of you folks know that one of the first actions in development that actually get into the ground is what's known as geotechnical boring. And what geotechnical boring is used for and executed is to ground test, basically truth test the ground in whatever area is being developed to get an actual reading of what is underground. So for example, I think many of you know, and rail is a prime example, as we come into the urban corridor, the records of the utilities in the public right-of-way, in the roads, often doesn't match what the actual ground truth of where those utilities are. And so geotechnical boring is used to do ground truth and test in anticipation of planning for the actual project. So back in the early 2010s, we were doing geotechnical boring, which typically is done by about a 4-inch diameter auger drill bit into the ground, and it slowly pulls up sediments in the layers that they exist and then are taken and then researched for what is exactly going on underground. What happened out in Waianae was that the contractor noticed, thankfully, the auger actually hit a burial and EV came up. So that contractor stopped the work, made all the necessary calls. SHPD came out and indeed confirmed that it was a burial, most likely pre-contact, several feet below the ground surface. This wasn't something that any of us expected. It had not happened before during geotechnical boring. And important and pertinent to this discussion, in the current administrative rules, geotechnical boring is not required to have archaeological monitoring for any project, no matter what it is. And there's a practical reason for this, and that is that geotechnical boring is so commonplace and there's so much geotechnical boring going on a daily basis that if SHPD had to review and approve every project's geotechnical boring, the construction in this state would grind to a halt, no pun intended. Now, that's not making a value judgment on whether it should or shouldn't be. That's just a practical reality that exists. Nonetheless, the Board of Water Supply, because we are a quasi-independent nonprofit public utility, we have more leeway in what we can and cannot do relative to profit margins, construction schedules, et cetera. We're not bound to stakeholders, for example, to get the highest return on investments, et cetera. So after that happened, and thankfully, with the help of the OIBC council member at the time, Ali'i Mitchell, who represented Waianae, and SHPD representative Regina Hilo, that and working with the cultural descendants out in Waianae, it was decided that we would rebury that burial in place and seek another alignment for our water project out in Waianae. And so we did that. But what we did have to do, because the administrative rules of SHPD don't allow for don't allow archaeological firms to simply monitor whenever either they see fit or a developer asks, we had to go back to the SHPD and expand the scope of our archaeological monitoring plan for that project to include archaeological monitoring of the geotechnical boring. And we did that. We redid the alignment. We redid the geotechnical boring. And thankfully, we had no fines. Now, since it's not required by law, the board has taken the position with my recommendations and the approval of our manager, Ernest Lau, that if and when we come across projects where we know that there's either a plethora of information pointing to burials in the area, or a high degree of probability, because we'll be in Jacques Sands, that there may be burials in the area, we at times elect to ask SHPD to approve of our archaeological monitoring of the geotechnical borings. Okay, so that sets the stage in part as to why we're coming so early in the process on these two almost adjacent projects, Ala Moana Boulevard and Kuhio Avenue. They're longer names, but I'm going to abbreviate them to those names. And I want to let everybody know how early this is. With Kuhio and Kuiulani, that project, we expect to get into actual construction no earlier than 2025, and most likely a little later than that. With Ala Moana Boulevard, we're looking at potentially up to 2027. I'm actually not sure when we're looking at Ala Moana Boulevard, but it is several years off as well. Again, the reason for coming to the council and previewing these projects is because we wanted to make the council aware of our actions so that nobody's taken by surprise if, in the unlikely event, there is an impact during geotechnical borings. It will be monitored and you folks will know. Now, there's another layer to this, and that is that even if we didn't have to do geotechnical borings on these projects, well, let me rephrase that. Even if we were bringing a project to the board where we weren't going to monitor the geotechnical borings, if they are in areas where there is a concern about either cultural sites or burial sites, we have made it a practice to come before the board much earlier than the projects, like the Kalailoa desal, to preview and work with not only the council, but cultural and potential lineal descendants of the area. So the point on that is both of these projects will need review and approval of the projects because we are recommending archaeological monitoring for both projects. So that is another layer that we are bringing to you folks on. So I want to stop there before we go into the actual project presentations to see if there are any questions, because I know that there are a number of relatively new members to the council.
Hello, Alani. Council member, there's any questions? I have a quick question, Alan. When you say that the second project, you're referring to item C on the agenda, the Alamana Boulevard 24-inch main.
Correct. Yes.
Gotcha. Yeah.
Items B and C are similar in why we're bringing it to the council and what we're doing. Both of them, because they are in areas of known burials, we are requesting of SHPD and giving notice to the council and descendants and any interested parties that we are requesting and something that isn't required by law, and that is that we be allowed to do archaeological monitoring of the geotechnical borings for these projects. Shall I move forward to the presentations?
Yes, please.
So one last word. I'm here to provide context and any questions relative to the board's role interacting with Native Hawaiian cultural descendants, burials, et cetera, but I'm not an archaeologist, nor am I a design consultant or engineer. For these projects, these two, Matt McDermott will be giving the presentations from an archaeological perspective as our archaeology consultant on these two projects for the design phase. And on the Zoom call, we have two representatives of Belt and Collins who are our consultants in this design phase. They can also be called upon if there are technical questions. I will basically take point on the projects, but that's who else is on the team ready to answer any concerns. So with that being said, Matt, would you like to begin?
Aloha kakou, everyone. Just a thumbs up. Everyone can hear me clearly? Thank you. So we're here to talk about this project, Kuhiu Kaiulani Avenue Water System Improvement Project. This is something that's come before the council previously. It was in December of 2018. We had an initial update on this project, and we're providing you this update as Alani described to you. Next slide, please. So I would like to just kind of go over the project's location, talk about the soils briefly, and then get into the project description so you have an idea what the scale is. And then we can talk about the historic context and the previous archaeology in the area. So you have an idea of what the sensitivity is of this area. We are in the central portion of Waikiki, as you can imagine. So it's a relatively sensitive area, obviously. So the project is aligned from along Kuhio Avenue from Kalakaua Avenue all the way to Kapahulu. It also stretches along Kaiulani Avenue from Kalakaua Mauka towards the Alawai Boulevard. Next slide, please. In terms of the soils of this area, it's kind of an important distinction. You can see on this map that the purple or pink represents fill or mixed lands. That's kind of the Eva end of the project area, whereas the Jaukas sands are the green on the more Diamond Head side. We'll see that that's kind of an important distinction with the fill lands being low-lying marshy sediments, and whereas the more Diamond Head side being the higher sandy deposits. Next slide, please. So in terms of the project itself, you can see it summarized here briefly. There'll be a 16-inch water line that goes along Kuhio Avenue. There'll be a 12-inch line along Kaiulani Avenue, kind of going Malcolm Mackay. They'll inactivate two existing lines, an 8-inch and a 2-inch that you can see listed there. There'll also be at least 15 of these geotechnical studies, borings, about 4-inch diameter. They'll be probably the first ground disturbance associated with the project that Alani was speaking to. In terms of the depth of the excavations, it'll vary. It could be as shallow as 5 to 6 feet, but with the greater width of the pipes that need to be installed, they will need to potentially go greater depths. The depths could go down to 12 and 15 feet, which are well below the water table in this part of the world. In terms of the widths, the 12-inch diameter will likely be about 2, potentially 3 feet wide, and the 16-inch diameter will be somewhere between maybe 3 to 4 feet in width. With where it goes deeper, they'll need to have slightly wider excavations just to account for the shoring and that sort of thing. Next slide, please. So here's just a graphic showing the breakdown geographically. You can see all along in blue the alignment of the 16-inch water line all along Kuhio Avenue, and then running it, showing in yellow the 12-inch line going Malcolm Mackay along Kaiulani Avenue, the two little sections where we'll inactivate existing water lines between Kanaloa and Makee Street are shown there as well. Next slide. So this is an important slide, and we'll have some representatives of this blown up just so you can see the existing conditions. It's hard to see at this scale, but the dark blue you see represents the planned water lines to be installed. Beneath that, you'll see a number of other colors that represent the existing utilities throughout the area. So if you look at that, and again, we'll have a blow up to show a little more detail. You know, you've got existing drain lines, electrical lines, gas lines, sewer lines, existing water lines, telephone lines, and amid all that utility, we need to install these new water lines to go into place. Next slide, please. Oh, before you change slides, one important distinction, if we go back, if you look down in the middle of the image that Kaiulani Avenue, you can see that the blue line is kind of hugging the Diamond Head side of Kaiulani Avenue and doesn't quite reach the intersection of Kalakaua and Kaiulani Avenue. It's an important distinction because there are some areas in the vicinity where human remains have been found before, and it's important that the alignment is along the Diamond Head side of Kaiulani Avenue. Next slide, please. So here's just two representatives. This is the Evermost end of the project along Kuhio Avenue, where it meets with Kalakaua Avenue. You can get a better idea at this scale just how many utilities are involved with this project and how many utilities need to be avoided and how little room there is to actually move the project if the alignment can't go forward the way it's designed. The project, of course, is still under design. The geotechnical results we'll go into the final design. But right now, this is what they're thinking is probably the best alignment based on existing information. Next slide, please. So here we have the far Diamond Head end where Kuhio Avenue comes into Kapahulu. And you can see again, just a nest of existing utilities that need to be navigated through to install these water lines. Next slide, please. So again, as I mentioned, we did the field inspection back in 2018 for an archaeological literature review and field inspection that summarized all this data. These figures are drawn from that archaeological literature review. We made a first informational presentation to the OIBC back in December of 2018, and we submitted that lit review for SHPD's review back in 2019. And the conversation with SHPD has been ongoing since then. Next slide. So getting into the cultural history and the cultural context for the project, this is a figure that you see a lot. It just kind of shows where we are geographically and culturally. You can see some of the Elier place names that are associated with this. In the central portion, you have Uluniu and Kaipuni. You have a little bit further above that, Kulua Okau, Niukai is also a place name associated with this area. You can see the different streams that come through this portion of Waikiki. If you get look at the Eva end of the project area, you can see the traditional Hawaiian fish ponds that were part of that landscape for so long up until the first part of the 20th century. Loko Paveo, Loko Kaipuni. So a lot of these areas that we've talked about in previous presentations before. Next slide, please. This is a blow up of the 1817 Kotzebue map. Again, it's a very early kind of schematic map showing the project area amid mixed habitation and agricultural fields, as well as fish ponds. That's the land use that extended in Waikiki or was existed in Lake Waikiki from traditional times up through the early pre-contact period up into the urbanization of Waikiki in the early 1900s. Next slide, please. Here we're in the 1850s. This is a modern aerial photograph showing the Land Commission awards from the Mahele that were issued in this area. By summarizing this data, we can see what land use was like in the mid-1850s time period. You can see there's house lots, fish ponds, agricultural fields, that sort of thing were all what this portion of Waikiki was used at that time period. Next slide, please. Here we have another example, the Leahi side. Again, it's land commission awards that are within the project area. You have taro lands, kula, house lots, showing a mix, like we saw in the Kotzebue map, of agricultural use as well as habitation. Next slide, please. Moving forward in time, we're at the 1855 LaPace map. You can see this kind of reinforces that distinction we saw from the soils map. The Diamond Head side is more in agricultural areas. That would be the low-lying areas that was the fill land and on the modern map, whereas the Diamond Head end shows trees and is more the Jauka sand areas. And again, it kind of reinforces that mixed use of habitation and agricultural lands. Next slide. We go up to this 1881 Bishop map. Again, this kind of reinforces the place names that the project area goes through. You can see the different streams that come down through the project area, as well as the Land Commission awards that are associated with this area. As you can see, there's very little development. Waikiki in the 1880s was still largely rural. You had some large landowners, particularly Hawaiian royalty, that owned portions of this area. Next slide, please. We're moving up in time now to this 1893 wall map. As you can see, the area Mauka of the upper part of this image, the Mauka portion is in the agricultural fields. Those probably were taro lo'i to begin with, and are now by this 1890s time period converted to rice. You can see some of the royalty that owned land in the vicinity, Queen Emma, Kapi'olani, Liliuokalani, the Cleghorn Estate. So the area is still largely rural, but it's right on the eve of being developed as Waikiki transformed with the beginning of the 20th century. Next slide, please. So here you can see this 1910 U.S. Coast Guard map. Large portions of the project area are still rural with fish ponds and agricultural lands. But you can see at the very Diamond Head end, we start to see some subdivisions, which will likely be developed into bungalows at this time as Waikiki started to transform. You can see along the Makai portion, there are very large houses from a lot of Hawaii's elite. But the current project area at this early part of the 20th century is largely rural and agricultural. Next slide, please. So we're moving up in time now to this 1920s Montserrat map. You can see there's been more streets input in. There's probably more bungalows produced, apartment buildings. Apuakehau Stream is still visible there. And we still have lots of open space in the Diamond Head portion of the project area. You can see at the upper portion of this image, the proposed Alawai Canal. It has not been put in place yet, but that is underway, and the Alawai Canal will be installed between 1921 and 1927. Next slide. A 1933 U.S. Army war map. Again, you can see that the urbanization or development of Waikiki is progressing with lots of bungalows and apartment buildings, particularly along the Diamond Head side. Streets being installed in the Ewa portion, which was previously undeveloped. Next slide. We get up to 1969, fully developed aerial photograph here showing the streets in largely as we know them today, full urban and tourist area that Waikiki is. Next slide, please. I did mention that there were some sensitivities at the intersection of Kalakaua Avenue and Kaiulani Street. This is the area that showed up on that 1881 Bishop map as the location of the Kwaihau Waikiki Church, Kalawina or the Calvinist Church. That was in place from the 1880s up until about the mid 1910s, about 1916. The church was closed, and the church burial plots were moved from this Waikiki location here at the intersection of Kalakaua and Kaiulani Street to the mother church on King Street. We've talked about this in the context of the Kaiulani project. So when we did the archaeological inventory survey in that area, we did see some scattered human remains associated with this church. The remains were all moved, but there's the potential for some scattered remains that were not moved as Kaiulani Street was widened. Importantly, as I pointed out, the project is going to be on the Diamond Head side of Kaiulani Street, away from these church remains when the church was expanded. Next slide. In terms of previous archaeology, there's been a fantastic amount of research done along this alignment. Approximately 50 previous archaeological studies and investigations have been done along the alignment. A number of them are actually within the current alignment of Kuhio Avenue, particularly monitoring projects. If you look at this image, you can see down at the bottom in the middle portion, it says Lima et al. 2014. That represents the kind of green hatch lines going diagonally across. This was a street project that had limited excavations that were monitored for tree plantings and that sort of thing. So not a complete review of all of Kuhio Avenue, but kind of a spot checks where excavations were monitored archaeologically. And there were no finds of human remains or archaeological deposits. Next slide, please. This just summarizes the different types of archaeological projects, the Kalakaua to Kuhio split to Lewers Avenue, showing the types of archaeological projects that have been done. Next slide. So again, more as we move from the Royal Hawaiian to Kaiulani, you can see this large number of archaeological projects that have been done. Again, that Lima et al. 2014 was right in Kuhio Avenue, as well as the Esh and Hammett 2006A, right in Kuhio Avenue. Again, not complete excavations of the road by any means, but relatively small spot checks of different areas as trees were planted and utilities were rerouted. Next slide, please. So now we get to more into the Diamond Head half of the project area, again, showing the different types of archaeological projects that have been done in the vicinity. And then we'll have a couple slides of the close-ups of this area. The next slide. Again, we have a combination of archaeological inventory surveys and monitoring projects in the vicinity. Next slide. This is the furthest Diamond Head portion of the project area, showing a little bit less previous work in this vicinity, but still some previous work along the margins. Next slide. In terms of the archaeological historic properties and burial finds that have been found, The historic properties are shown in the yellow cloud or orange cloud, whereas the previous finds of human remains and burial sites are shown as red triangles. So at the furthest Diamond Head end, we have a burial find that was found at the intersection of Kuhiu and Kalakaua in the 1994 time period. Was relocated during utility work. You see a large cluster of burials, Makai, of the current arrangement at the kind of right-hand edge of this image, and that's the work that was associated with the redevelopment of the international marketplace. Next slide, please. We have the Diamond Head end of the project here. You can see that there is a few trash pits at the end of Kaiulani Avenue, the Makai end, as well as some burials that were found during the realignment of a Board of Water Supply water line or installation of a water line. But again, those are right at the intersection of Kaiulani and Kalakaua, and the current project will be a little bit mauka of this, thankfully. Next slide, please. So next steps, again, we're in consultation with SHPD about developing a monitoring program for this project. There is heightened sensitivity, particularly along the Diamond Head portion of the project area where the Jauka sands are, that higher land, maybe a moderate or lesser sensibility or sensitivity along the Eva side, because that was the fill land, the low-lying agricultural areas, a heightened probability of potential human remains along the Kaiulani Kalakaua intersection, and that'll take a good deal of careful inspection in that portion. So we'll work on an archaeological monitoring plan to be submitted to SHPD, and we'll continue consultation with SHPD. And of course, we'll provide updates as needed to the Barrow Council. A lot of information, but please let me know if there's any questions. Just the last slide quickly, just to reinforce, you know, how congested this area is. You know, it's a water line that needs to be installed amid a nest of existing utilities. There's just not a lot of redesign room for this area. Thank you.
All right, Council, any questions?
Aloha, this is Mana. I just want to thank Matt for the presentation. Mahalo to Alani and to the Board of Water Supplies for always looking ahead, planning ahead, moving forward with caution. You know, we hope that more sooner than later, other projects or future projects will follow in your footsteps and kind of plan ahead, especially when you're excavating in this part of the world. You know, we know what was there, we know what's still there. So mahalo nui. Thank you.
Mahalo, Mana.
Councilman, oh, I see Councilmember Chuck Arahoy.
Yeah, I have three questions of Matt. Matt, number one, on your last slide there, you showed a whole bunch of utilities within the right-of-way of Kuhio Avenue. When those were put in, is there any record of EV finds?
Very good question. You know, there were some burial finds with some of those, and they show on that the red triangles that showed on the images. But generally, no. And a lot of those utilities, by the way, too, were probably put in place before there was archaeological monitoring and historic preservation, so we don't have rules.
Yeah, the red triangles are only related to actual studies. I was just wondering, back in the day when those lines are first put in, is there any record of EV being removed or dug up?
Question, yeah. Relative to the Board of Water Supply, if you don't mind coming out.
Sure.
So we most of us are aware that the burial laws were put in place in 1990. Prior to that, there were, to my knowledge, with the Board of Water Supply, no official records kept of when we encountered burials on our projects. We know anecdotally and from some of the old timers that absolutely there were projects that were done by the Board of Water Supply where burials were encountered. And for the most part, what we know is that whether there were Kanaka on the projects or Kanaka nearby that were consulted. That was essentially the norm. It was handled privately. But frankly, we also know that there were times when neither Kanaka were on the project or within the vicinity, and burials were handled in ways that we would be very saddened by now. So the short of it is, I can't answer for the other utilities, except I do know anecdotally, because I work also with and for Hawaiian Electric, that prior to the necessity, the legal requirements that were outlined in the burial laws that were put in place in 1990, prior to that, the utilities did not keep records, formal records of burial supply, burial finds on our project. So even though we obviously, all our Board of Water Supply are already in these areas, we don't have records of our projects relative to burials and or cultural finds.
Okay, thanks a lot. My second question is, you referred, Matt, you referred to a previous study along the right-of-way by Esch and Hammett. And you said that was primarily for landscaping, and I presume that's along the sidewalks, and they were not really in the travel way itself. Is that true?
The study, it was mostly like taking care of surface features, like sidewalks, repaving, that sort of thing. But there were some utility relocations and excavations for tree plantings. So that would be within the road itself, some of it.
Okay. My final question, just out of curiosity, on your work schedule, you talk about deactivating 8-inch lines, but on a map, you only show deactivating a portion of those 8-inch lines. Are you just leaving the rest of the 8-inch lines in place, or are they going to be continued to be used?
I think, Matt, if you don't know that, we can turn that over to our Belton Collins representatives.
I think they could answer it better than I could. Thank you.
So could one of our Belton Collins representatives introduce themselves and then answer that to the best of your folks' knowledge?
I'm really curious as to why you're only deactivating part of the 8-inch and not all of the 8-inch.
Sure, understood. I'm looking for my people.
Can you hear me? I'm sorry.
There you go. Okay.
Okay. I'm sorry. My name is Trina Onuma. I'm with Belt Collins, Hawaii. The 8-inch portion that we are deactivating is, how shall I put this? The only 8-inch portion in that area. There are actually 24-inch and the 16-inch that we're deactivating within the Kuhio corridor. So it's, you know, the 8-inch in a sense is a duplicate line that we will be taking out of commission when we put in the new 16-inch line. Is that adequate?
Well, no, because Matt's map shows that most of the eight-inch line on Kuhio Avenue is not going to be deactivated. So that's,
Matt, I'm sorry. Who?
It would be Leslie.
Would you please bring up the last figure?
Well, it wasn't the last. Yeah, okay.
Okay, so I believe there's 24 and 16 inch lines from like here, pretty much all the way through Kuhio. The 8-inch line is approximately from, I think, here to here.
Where's here?
Wailana. Could you, I'm sorry. Do you remember what page number?
Who are you asking that of?
He's asking about, I believe, the first figure out of the two that was a blow up. Is that correct?
Yes, you show, yeah. And it's just in the area of Kailani that is going to be deactivated.
Yeah, which is right about in through here. That is the 8-inch segment is the only 8-inch segment. It goes from here to there.
You have to explain here to there because we don't know where you're talking about.
Okay. Oh, I'm sorry. The The 8-inch portion of line is approximately from Kailani over to Walina. And it does not extend to the west, and it does also does not extend to the west of Walina, and it does not extend east of Kailani. It connects into the, it goes up our Malka. It would extend Malka up Walina, which is what we will connect back into. And then on Kailani, I believe it connects to the existing 12-inch, along Kailani. So that's why it does not extend either east, west of Walina or, I'm sorry, west of Walina or east of Kailani.
Okay, I apologize. I must have, this was not the map that I was referring to, but there, I must have misread an earlier map. I had the impression that the 8-inch went all the way back to Kalakaua Avenue, and you're telling me that no, that's wrong.
Yes.
Okay. You answered my question.
Okay. Sorry.
Okay, council members, any more questions? Hearing no questions from council members, Auhea Okoke Kayaulu from the community members, are there any questions? Hearing no questions, Alani and Matt, would you like to conclude this presentation? Or any words of conclusion, or should I move on to the next agenda item?
We are concluded with this item and we can move to the next.
Okay, we have concluded. Next up on the agenda is item C. Oh, Kalamai, go ahead.
It's Leslie. We do have Deputy Attorney General Laura Chun on this Zoom, if you would like to speak to her about the previous request in which you had a question. If not, you can let her know.
Is she on the call?
Hello, yes, I'm on the call. And I have Cindy Young in the room with me too, although I don't think you can see her right now.
Okay, I'll put this online and then we can also continue this discussion offline at your convenience. But one of our council members had brought up a point of issue, which is, okay, in some of our powers as the Oahu Island Burial Council is we recognize lineal and cultural descendants for projects. And so in the course of a burial treatment plan, we consult with these lineal and cultural descendants in which to get their input to help us render a decision to preserve in place or relocate human remains, as well as for short-term and long-term preservation measures. One of our council members had brought up a concern that there are parties who go for cultural or lineal descendancy recognition are also paid consultants on projects that the burial treatment plans pertain to. And so one of his question was, is this recognition of consultants ethical or legal? Council Member Galutaria, I just want to make sure that I'm being accurate, was what my statement was accurate to what your concern is.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. And thank you to the AG for showing. Yeah, my question was exactly that. From a legal perspective, from an ethical perspective, should an OIBC, should a descendant also be a paid consultant for the project or the area that they are being recognized as a descendant of?
Okay, so I think the answer is that the burial council only has to decide if that person qualifies as a cultural or lineal descendant. So whether or not they're a paid consultant, they could still be recognized if they meet all the criteria. Whether there's some kind of ethical issue, I don't see there being an ethical issue necessarily, or anything that the burial council can enforce or do anything about if the cultural descendant also happens to be a paid consultant. Again, as long as they meet all of the requirements.
So the law does not ask or address the issue of paid consultation and lineal descendancy or cultural descendancy, and if it's appropriate. That the law does not in any way address that.
No. It's not addressed in the rules.
I mean, it stands to reason that there would, and I'm not talking for any of the employers, but it stands to reason that if somebody is in a deciding of, you know, an opportunity to influence a decision, that that needs to be addressed. And even if we got to address it in statute, I think we should at least make sure that it's on the table for discussion. Would you agree or not?
I mean, that's something I haven't thought of. I'm not sure, but
okay, because this has been going on for so long, it's like it's part of the furniture already, right?
There, I also want to point out that, you know, if the consultant is recognized as a descendant, it doesn't mean that other people can't also be recognized as a descendant, and those people also have to, you know, be consulted before a decision is made.
Well, there's a difference between being consultant and being a paid consultant. That's my question. Mm-hmm. My question is, whether it's ethical, well, maybe that's not your decision to make. Maybe we got to take it to the Ethics Commission.
Yeah, yeah. Questions about ethics should go to the Ethics Commission. Yeah. We can just advise questions. What the, you right. know, what is allowed, what the Burial Council can do.
Yeah, so the Burial Council has the right to, obviously, because it's been going on for such a long time, to recognize paid consultants as lineal descendants.
Right.
So it's up to, and then if anything needs to be done to address this situation, it needs to be done legislatively?
That's one way. I'm not sure if there could be rules, but the rules would depend on what's allowed by the statutes too. So it. Yeah.
So everything goes back to statute then.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Well, that answers my question. I really appreciate it. I, for one, want to know. So you've answered my question. So I know perhaps where we got to go from here. And there's discussions on the legislative level that are going to be happening soon. So I appreciate you. Thank you very much.
All right. Thank you.
Chuck, I saw your hand up.
Yeah. Could I just say something? I'm sorry I was late. I missed this earlier discussion. I didn't know what the subject was, and I figured being late, I wouldn't say anything, but now that it's on the table, I don't think we have the right to, we have to, if a person comes forward as a lineal or cultural descendant and has the paperwork to prove it, and SHPTE backs that paperwork up, we have no choice but to approve it. I mean, you either are or you aren't. I mean, it's a black and white situation. Now, whether there's a conflict of interest, I would think that the conflict of interest would be between Mr. Joe over here, who happens to be a consultant, paid or otherwise, and his fellow cultural descendants. That's where the conflict of interest comes in, between he and those people. If those people are not comfortable with what his presentation is, then they got a problem. So that's where the real issue is, you know. So anyway, that's my point.
Is there and Chuck, do you recall, because you've been on this council much longer than I, is there some kind of caveat that tells the council that any member who is a lineal descendant or cultural descendant or applying for is also a paid consultant? Yes or no?
I don't understand the question. Say it again.
In the interest of full disclosure and to the best of your recollection, those who have been applying for cultural or lineal descendancy, have they been forthcoming about their roles as paid consultants?
There's only one situation that I know of where the person has come forward and said that. And frankly, I don't know of any situation where one of the cultural descendants had, at the time we approved their descendancy, were a paid consultant. They may have been paid consultants with other developers, but in this particular situation or whatever the situation is, I don't recall any time when that's ever been made an issue. Now, I agree with you that if somebody comes forward as a cultural descendant, they should say right up front that, hey, I happen to work for this developer, but also I'm a cultural descendant to the Ivy here, and go on record. It's like when you recuse yourself from making a decision. And that goes back to the cultural descendants. That consultant has to work with those descendants, and it's really between he or she and those other descendants to be transparent and say, hey, in case you don't know it, I'm working for Ford developer and whatever. I mean, I think that's where the really real issue is.
Well, I would also, venture to say that if I was an employer, it would be good, perhaps to know that the consultant is a member of the burial council. But I wanted to know if it was legal, number one, if it was ethical, number two. We got the answer from AG on the legal. We don't have the answer from ethical because we haven't asked them. And all of these years, it apparently is standard practice. So I'm not quite sure where we go except to legislative correction or, to ethical. And I don't want to belabor the point. I mean, we're already into this meeting, Chair. So if you want to move forward, I'm fine with the answers that LG gave, AG gave, rather.
Council members, any more questions?
Chair, this is Dodge from Honua Consulting. Can I have a moment?
Sure.
Thank you. Just to speak on this, it was, we, as Honua Consulting, got offered a job for archaeological cultural monitoring, archaeological study, things like that, from a state agency. That state agency happens to conflict with a spouse of one of our employees. We called the ethics department and we said, this is the situation. We have a job opportunity, but there's a financial benefit to one of our employee spouses that could be perceived, not direct, but could be perceived. And they have an influence on the outcome of the decision. And so we waited for the ethics decision and they came back and said that, as a private entity, Honua Consulting has no issue. We can't determine anything Honua Consulting does. But as the spouse has a financial interest in it, and she is a state employee and a member of a board, that there is an ethical conflict and that person would need to recluse themselves from any decisions on any part of that situation. They couldn't be a part of the meeting. They couldn't be a part of the decision. They couldn't be a part of anything of that sort pertaining to that situation. And that is how the ethics committee came back to us. As Honua, we declined the contract. It was just too close to comfort. There's too many variables of unknowns that we didn't want to get lost in the mix, and bad perception. The optics of it probably didn't look that great either. But just know that the ethics is very, very conservative in their ruling. It, like I said, it was a employee spouse. And so that's how they handled it with us.
Thank you. Thank you for your mana'o. Any other council members have any questions? Hearing none, Council Member Galateria, I'm putting together my to-do list here. Is there anything in particular that you would like me to do for next meeting?
No, Mr. Chair, I think we've covered this adequately, and going forward, I believe that what was common practice could maybe be readdressed. And I think we've identified ways that we're going to do that. If anything, I would like to get a ruling from ethics. But if there's something that the chair would entertain, I'd appreciate that.
Okay. Lauren, will you be on for a few more minutes?
I can be.
Okay. Thank you. Okay, let's keep moving forward up on the agenda. If there's no more questions from the council or from the community. Hearing no comments, next up, item C, update on the Alamoana Boulevard 24-inch main Alawai Canal to Kalakaua Avenue project. Ahupua'o Waikiki, Kamakua'o Honolulu, Ka'ailana, O'ahu, TMK 126005 and 007-0014, various rights of ways.
Aloha, Council. Once again, Board of Water Supply is presenting this project in the context of the last one, where we are looking for SHPD to review and approve our archaeological monitoring plan, which will include something that is not normally required legally, which is archaeological monitoring of the geotechnical boring for this project. This one is again, like the other one, still several years away. We're in the very initial development phases. And just a side note, because Brickwood brought it up, I am a Kanaka. I'm employed by the Board of Water Supply. My lineages go to various portions of this island, but this year makes 20 years of me doing this work, and I made it a point that I would never seek, as long as I was either employed or a consultant on projects. My own personal opinion was, even though there are projects that have interacted with areas where my kupuna have lived and are buried, I've not sought cultural or lineal descendancy for any burials. And I don't plan to, unless and until I am po with this work. So that being said, I'd like to turn it over, if there are no questions immediately, to Matt McDermott.
Aloha Kauko, everybody. Matt McDermott with Cultural Surveys. So very similar situation to what we just discussed for Kuhiwa Avenue and Kaiulani. We have another Board of Water Supply replacement project. This is Alamoana Boulevard, 24-inch main Alawai Canal to Kalakaua Avenue project. So we'll go through a similar presentation. We'll talk about the location of the project. We'll talk about the project description. We'll talk about the historic context, land use history of the area, so we have an idea of the sensitivities in terms of archaeological deposits and burial sites. And we'll then talk about what the next steps are as we go forward. Like the previous project, Cultural Surveys Hawaii has been putting together a archaeological literature review and field inspection, which we submitted to the SHPD for their determination on moving forward with this project. Next slide, please. So this, both an aerial photograph, modern aerial photograph, and a USGS map showing the locations and the streets involved with this. You can see we're at the far Ewa end of Waikiki. The Alawai Canal is clearly shown there as a place, locator point. You have Alamoana Boulevard showing as a big curve that comes down from Ewa towards Kalakaua Avenue. You have Ina Road, Kalia Road, Hobron Lane, Kai'o'o Drive, as well as the Pepe Street. These are all the streets that will be affected by this project. Next slide, please. The soils map showing what we're dealing with here. This is an area that was before the 1910 time period when Waikiki was developed with lots of fill, was a low-lying area with lots of fish ponds, So that this shows up as mostly fill land, as you can see here, shaded in blue, with the portion along Kalia Road, with touching a small portion of Jaukas Sands. Next slide, please. This chart shows the what's to be done. You can see along Ala Moana Boulevard, you've got a 24-inch water line to be installed with the length there. Hobron Lane, 8-inch. Kai'o'o is 8-inch. Nipepepe is Hobron Lane. It has an 8-inch. Ina Road, 12-inch. And Kalia Road is a 12-inch. And again, the depths will be anywhere from 6 to 12 feet. So certainly below the water table in most instances, and the widths will vary from 4 feet for the 24-inch line. 8-inch line could be as narrow as like 2.5 feet, and the 12-inch will probably be about 2 feet wide. Next slide, please. Similar figure showing the entire project footprint. The dark blue represents the water lines to be installed, and you can see the faint coloration around it at this scale are the existing utilities. Again, we're talking drain lines, sewer lines, electric lines, existing water lines, as well as fiber optic and that sort of thing. So lots of utilities going through this area, and I've got a couple slides after this that are blow-ups that give you a scale of what this looks like. The first one is along Hobron Lane at the more Mauka or northern portion of the project area. Next slide, please. So here we have a section of Hobron Lane clearly shown. The image on the bottom shows which sheet map that is for your overall location within the project area. As far as a place location, Eaton Square is just on the Mauka portion or on the top of the page there. And you can see at this scale, clearly the water line that's going to be installed is amid a nest of other type utilities, including those drain lines, the gas lines, and the telephone lines, et cetera, which show up as those other colors there. Next slide is a portion of Ala Moana where the 24-inch line will be installed. Again, the image down at the bottom left-hand corner shows where we are within the project area. And you can see we're on the very busy Ala Moana Boulevard. You've got four lanes going in the left-hand direction or towards Eva. And at the bottom of the image, you've got three lanes going in the Diamond Head direction, with the water line being in near the center line of Ala Moana Boulevard. But you can see all the existing utilities showing up as those different colors. Next slide, please. Just a geographic color-coded map to show the different areas. The 8-inch line shows up as red, the 12-inch line shows up as green, and the 24-inch shows up as blue there along Ala Moana. Next slide. In terms of land use for this area, this is a modern USGS map showing the land commission awards that were awarded during the Mahele in the 1850s. You can see this area has a fair amount of land commission awards that were awarded. These testify to the types of land use that were going on at that time. The next slides kind of show some breakdown of what types of land use are associated with those areas. So here you can see, similar to the previous presentation, kind of a mix of house lots and then also like 2081:1, the three lo'i kalo patches. So agricultural as well as habitation in this portion of Waikiki. Next slide. Again, house lots, an awai, kalo lo'i, so a mix, a small pond, all in keeping with the types of traditional land use we would have had in the pre-contact period and continuing up into the 1800s in Waikiki. Next slide. So look at this kind of schematic recreation of what Waikiki looked like at a very far out scale, 1800 to 1810, just showing this area being amid a number of fish ponds, Kaipuni fish pond, Paveo fish pond, particularly in the area that was Fort DeRussy and became filled in. And we have Pitinayo Stream, which roughly followed the alignment of Ala Moana Boulevard today, was coming right through the project area. Next slide. 1855 La Paz map, again showing a mix of habitation as well as fish ponds. And next slide. The 1881 map, again, we have Pitinayo Stream and the Kahawai as it hits the ocean coming through the project area. Local Kaipuni, local Paiveo is off to the right-hand side of the image. And the Land Commission awards that were awarded in this area are shown. So a mix of low-lying areas and fish ponds characterized the land use in the 1880s. Next slide. This 1901 Montserrat map shows the encroachment of streets from the Mauca direction. We have Waikiki Road, which became Kalakaua, but you still have all the ponds still in place. Not much development within the project area proper at this turn of the 20th century. Next slide. 1912, we're only 12 years later, we can see a grid of streets being at least planned, if not constructed at this point. And you can see an early schematic representation of the proposed Alawai Canal there, which would cut off the Pitinayo Stream from Mauca. Next slide. 1919 U.S. War Department map. You can see that Fort DeRussy is now in place. The filling in of the fish ponds in the Fort DeRussy area started about 1910. It looks like that is far along in 1919. Within the project area, you've got a lot of small residences, probably small bungalows, and the system of streets that the project area are in development now. Some of them exist, but not others. Next slide. 1927 coastal area photograph. You can see that a lot of dredging is going on within the project area. In the central portion of the image, you see those broad white scars. Those are areas where dredge material from offshore has been pumped as a slurry onto the land surface to fill in some of these formerly low-lying areas. We do have the Alawai Canal already built with bridges across it in 1927. Next slide. 1927 Sanborn fire insurance map showing the type of development we have at this time period. You can see lots of small dwellings and small apartment buildings. Can't quite see at this scale, but the small squares represent individual dwellings. The larger elongated ones are typically apartment buildings. So the air is being developed on top of that new land surface that was pumped in from offshore. Next slide. 1959, lots more development. You've got the start of the Hilton Wine Village there along the southern or Diamond Head side of the project area. Fort DeRussy has structures there just outside of the project area. Ala Moana Boulevard is clearly shown with its tree-lined central median, and we've got a lot of those same elongated low-rise apartment buildings in the project area proper. Next slide. In terms of previous archaeology, there's been a significant amount done in this area. You may remember discussions from 6-7 years ago with the work we did along Kalia Road for the Fort DeRussy sewer line reinstallation and upgrade, as well as the Grand Islander, which is along the Mackay side of Kalia Road. A significant amount of work was done actually in Kalia Road for this area. And that was all done under archaeological and cultural monitoring. Within the central portion of the project area, you can see the streets are clearly shown, but there hasn't been a great deal of work. There's been some archaeological inventory surveys, like along Ka'o'o Street, as well as along Kalakaua, where the former Wave Waikiki was. There was an archaeological inventory survey and monitoring. Next slide, please. Again, this image shows the previously recorded historic properties. The largest is the Alawai Canal itself, constructed in 1927. Lots of the ponds you see in the Fort DeRussy footprint at the kind of lower right-hand portion of this image are assigned historic property numbers. And the red triangles represent prior finds of human skeletal remains and burial sites. Next slide. So we're dealing with the same constraints we had described under the Puhio project earlier. There is potential for archaeological deposits, including human skeletal remains. An archaeological monitoring program will be instituted as part of the project. This will include the preparation of an archaeological monitoring plan for SHPD review and acceptance. We'll have ongoing consultation with the OIBC and the SHPD as needed as the project continues. The last slide, of course, is just going back to the congested nature of this portion of the world with all the existing utilities in place and the difficulties of putting a new 24-inch and 8-inch and 12-inch lines amid all these existing utilities. Thank you very much for your attention, and any questions, please let me know.
Council members, any questions? Mahalo, Matt. Any question? Hey, Matt, I had a quick question. And looking at the previous presentation for the Kuhio Avenue and Ka'iolani Avenue water system, the majority of the lands there towards the Eva side were fill material. Again, you can correct me if I'm wrong. So the burial finds, were they discovered as full sets of human remains, or did they disarticulated brought in with the fill material, or do you have any of that information or no?
Right. It's a mix. Some of those triangles represent just finds of a single bone or a bone fragment in fill. The one that I pointed out at the intersection of Kalakaua and Kuhio, at the furthest Eva end there, that one was a partial individual that had been impacted by previous utility work, at a much earlier time. So it's kind of a mix.
Thank you, Matt. No questions from the council. Any member, any comments from the community?
Aloha, kamanao. This is Keala Norman.
Hi, aloha, Keala.
Aloha. So I have a question for Alani and Matt. My ohana and I, we're from the Waikiki area, and many of the names on the LCAs we have genealogical ties too, but especially in the Kalia area, my mom, my grandmother, my great-grandfather, all born and raised there. My mother's still with me today. My question is, did I hear correctly that you are going to be consulting with the descendants of the area for these projects?
Once we understand what our project, what is the word I want to use? So Keala, I'm assuming you were on earlier and you heard my explanation of why we're coming so early.
Yes, so I mahalo you for that.
Mahalo. So we don't even know the exact alignment of this project yet. And that's what the geotechnical boring is for. So our position is that we'd like to get the geotechnical boring done, have a draft of our initial engineering plan to then come to you folks with both the council and any recognized descendants. So the answer is qualified. Yes, we will be. We don't have enough information right now that we think it's productive to come to you folks. Once we get an alignment for the project mapped out as a draft, then yes, we would like to come and meet with you folks as appropriate. Does that answer
your question? Yes, it does. Thank you so much. Mahalo. You get my email, huh, Alani?
I believe so, but...
Okay. Just want to double check. All right. Thank you so much for answering my question. That was all I had. Mahalo.
Mahalo, Keala, and mahalo, Alani. Any other comments from the community? Okay, hearing none, we're moving on to item D on the agenda, which is update on Kalailoa Seawater Desalinization Facility Project, maka ahupua'a o hono uliuli, ka makuo eva, ka ailana o Oahu, TNK 19103100001, a portion of it, and 028 portion, and Ola East Street right of way. Presentation by Cultural Service Hawaii.
Okay, so this is the last time for today that Board of Water Supply will be presenting. Thanks everybody for your continued patience. So I'm gonna start off and give context like I did the last two, and then Scott is gonna give the presentation on this project. Now, this is a much more in the context of OIBC and the descendant community, a much more traditional project that you would review. So we came to the board several years ago when we first were developing and looking at this project. So as a quick background, because of the numerous stressors on our water system on Oahu, and those stressors include the continued development of areas along the island, especially out on the west, southwest side in Kapolei, Kalailoa area. We know that that's one of the major new building areas for housing, homes, and town. The additional population, the growing population of Oahu, and the stressors that are being put on the water supply environmentally, seawater level rise, as well as climate change. The Board of Water Supply, we have a minimum 30-year window of looking forward to assure that the board can adequately meet the needs for water in well into the future for Oahu. And importantly, if you didn't know it, the Board of Water Supply is the only one of its kind in the country, I believe, that is quasi-autonomous. And so we are a part of the city and county of Honolulu. We are a part of that apparatus. However, our manager and the management of the board is under the manager. The manager is selected by the Board of Water Supply's board members. Those members are selected by the mayor through a review process. However, we operate independently. So the city and county, you know, to be blunt, for example, can't touch our budget. We manage our budget ourselves. And we are considered a nonprofit, quasi semi-autonomous government entity. And so that's just kind of a background on who we are. Barry Usugawa, who is the head of our division that is devoted to water resources and long-range planning, is also on this call, and he's heading up this project. This is the first time that the Board of Water Supply is looking to build and run a desalinization plant, because we are looking forward and we see the need for an additional fresh water supply, especially out in the Ewa Ahupua'a area going forward. So several years ago, we presented this initial project to the council and whomever was there at the time. And what we have done in the meantime is, in consultation with recognized descendants of the area and SHPD, we came up with a very, very robust archaeological inventory survey for this project. That AIS is complete. And what we'd like to do is share of all of our findings in a bid for complete transparency and openness as we go along with the council, as well as any interested parties. And so that's really what we're going to do today. And the next steps after this are to look at the engineering and design of the project and start to look towards future development of the project. So a little bit different than the ones earlier. And if there are no questions, I'll certainly take a moment to entertain any questions. If there aren't any, I'll turn it over to Scott of Cultural Surveys Hawaii to do the presentation. Okay, hearing no and getting nothing from Kamanao, Scott, would you take over the presentation?
Yep. Can everyone hear me?
Yes, we can.
Perfect. Good morning. I look forward to talking about the AIS results for the Kalaeloa Seawater Desalination Facility. As Alani discussed, we brought this to the OIBC back in August 2019 to discuss the AIS testing strategy and the project. And now we're here to present the results of that AIS based off of that testing strategy. Next slide. So the project is located in Kalaeloa on the Eva Plain near Barbers Point. The former Barbers Point Naval Air Station is to the east and the Par refinery is to the north. The project area is comprised of two parts, one being TMK Parcel 28, which is shown in red, and the other being a proposed corridor that runs along, runs north-south along the canal and east-west on Olai Street between the canal and Kalaeloa Boulevard, and that is shown in blue. Next slide. The project will include the construction of enclosed buildings to house a reverse osmosis treatment train, as well as construction of an administrative office. The initial construction will be for the treatment facility on the northwest corner of the project area, and some space will be reserved for potential future plan expansion. Other things would be roads that will be constructed to provide access to the facility, and a wastewater leach field that is planned for actually the northwest corner of the property. Next slide. Here is a rendering of the current planning design. As Lonnie noted, it's still really conceptual, and the design and phase of the desalination facility will come after the AIS. Next slide. So previous consultation for this project, back in August 2018, there was a meeting with SHPD on the project details. CSH had conducted an LRFI, literature review and field inspection, and in so doing, realized that a previous AIS done by Aki Sonodo in 2002 had not been accepted by the SHPD. And so it was determined that a new AIS was likely needed. A consultation meeting was conducted with SHPD to discuss primarily the next steps. 2 weeks later, a site visit was held. 11 community members who were active at the time in the Barbers Point area were contacted and invited to be present, as well as SHPD. Unfortunately, no community members were able to attend that meeting. And so the meeting attendees included SHPD, Board of Water Supply, Lim Tiako, who is the consultant for the project, and CSH. In mid-2019, consultation letters were sent out to 65 parties, which included the AIS testing strategy and the project location description. Several acknowledged receipts. There were some responses, but none with concerns in regards to the testing strategy or the project in general. In August 2019, the project again was presented to the OIBC, which the consensus at the time was in general support for the project and the testing strategy. So in October and November 2019, the project met with SHPD to finalize the testing strategy. And just recently in June 2021, we did a presentation to SHPD of the testing results. And now we're here to present them to the OIBC. Next slide. So a quick review of the project area. The project is located on exposed coral outcrop, which is pretty indicative of the Barbers Point area. Next slide. The project area was likely fairly uninhabited for much of the human occupation of the area. There's no LCAs in the area. The project area was within grazing lands during the earliest 19th century, as shown in the early 20th century, as shown in the map to the left. A coastal trail. Sorry, you can see the sisal and the sugarcane plantation occurring to the north, but there wasn't enough soil to utilize the area to the south. And on the map to the right, you can kind of see the sugarcane and sisal infrastructure kind of to corroborate that thing. Next slide. Over the years, the project area remained relatively undeveloped. In the 1930s, a U.S. Army road was constructed along what is now Olay Street that provided access to Barbara's Point. And a coastal trail is shown on the south, to the south of the project area. Next slide. So with the 1950s aerial, you can see a U.S. Coast Guard observatory to the north in what is now the Parin refinery, and an access road extending to the east along the right side of the project area. Next slide. With the military occupation of the land in the mid-20th century, the project area was altered with these graded roads and paths crossing the project area. On the right, you can see the Parin refinery being constructed, and industrial scale cattle grazing or cattle facility to the left or to the east, west of the project area. You can also see a small canal that was constructed where the road previously was on the east side of the project area. Next slide. The 1993 aerial shown here shows a lot of grading that was previously conducted in the project area, primarily in the southwest corner and to the north of the project area. This shows pretty well the two areas of exposed karst that is relatively undisturbed, with the exception of the 1950s military roads that kind of cut through the project area. And you can see the canal was widened, which was widened in, I believe, 1990. Next slide. Previous archaeological studies that were conducted in the area. Four of note is the Oshima 1975 study that runs along the canal, the Dai et al. 2008 study on the east side of the canal, and the Kawachi 1990 and Sonoto and Tichinal 2002 studies, which were both conducted within the project area. Next slide. Previously identified historic properties in the area include the 6373, a habitation site of three features, SIHP 6375, which is a complex of pit caves, of which eight were given formal feature numbers, and SIHP 4209, which is a previous inadvertent discovery of human skeletal remains that were documented in 1990 during the expansion of the canal. Next slide. So for the previous archaeological studies in the vicinity, the Oshima 1975 conducted a reconnaissance survey of the entire canal. And they identified several sites north of the project area, but none in the immediate vicinity of the project area or within the project area. Dai et al. 2008 didn't identify any historic properties either in the area adjacent to the current project area. The human remains, SIHP 4209, were documented by Kawachi 1990 in a pit cave along the east edge of the current project area. And then an archaeological inventory survey was conducted by Sonoto Tichinal 2002 for the then proposed desalination facility, which included the entire project area and a TMK to the south. And they identified three historic properties, as well as further documenting the previously identified burial. And during that AIS, they excavated six pit caves within SIHP 6375, identified charcoal, a possible bone toggle, and various bird remains, including extinct species. Next slide. So CSH conducted the archaeological inventory survey in 2020. The AIS strategy was divided into two areas, the area of intensive survey shown in yellow and the remaining portions of the project area outside the yellow. As discussed previously, the area in the northwest or northeast corner is the primary area of impact, and Board of Water Supply wanted to ensure that every feasible effort was conducted to identify potential historic properties and pit caves in that area. This figure also shows the previous graded areas that we discussed earlier, and the dark blue dots is a previously graded area within the intensive survey area that we tried to expose the buried karst. This also shows the previously identified features and sites within the project area. So for the AIS fieldwork, there were four aspects: a pedestrian inspection of the entire project area to identify any cultural features or paleoenvironmental features within the project area. We identified every pit cave over half of a meter in diameter within the area of intensive survey, and tried to document representative portions of the pit cave complex outside of the area of intensive survey. Following the pedestrian inspection, a LIDAR survey was conducted to identify any anomalies with similar characteristics as pit caves. The goal of this was to help further fill in the distribution of pit caves within the or outside of the area of intensive survey.
Scott, can you go back a second and explain to our audience what a LIDAR survey is, please?
Yeah, it's an unmanned, they use an unmanned drone that shoots basically radar several hundred points, basically every feet, and it documents the heights of the topography and depths in the case of the pit caves. So in the area of the dark blue dots, the area that was previously graded that we tried to expose, we basically tried to remove as much dirt from the surface as possible to identify any pit caves that might have been buried due to the irregularity of the surface. It was very difficult to identify pit caves versus just undulations in the surface. So we conducted a ground penetrating radar survey within the area to try to identify any anomalies that may be pit caves to help further illustrate the distribution of pit caves in the project area. Following that, we conducted subsurface testing of an additional three pit caves within the area of intensive study to better provide a representation of the project area. The majority of the features tested by Sinodo and Tichenol were outside of that area of intensive survey. Next slide. So during the pedestrian inspection, we further documented the three historic properties that Sinodo and Tichenol identified. That includes the human burial site, the habitation features at the south end of the project, and the pit cave complex. In total, we identified 613 additional pit caves, primarily within the area of identified survey, of intensive survey. However, there's substantially more outside of that intensive survey area. In total, 621 total features were documented, which included GPS points, photos, and basic documentation. Next slide. Running through a bunch of photos of the project area and the findings, the photo in the top left is the overview of the Eli Street offsite improvements area. It's been heavily graded. There's several pipelines that extend on the left side of that photo, as well as on the right side of that photo. Below that is the drainage canal that runs along the east edge of the project area. And along the edge of the drainage canal is the access, is an access road, which is shown on the right. Next slide. The photo on the left shows the previously graded road area that extends through the center of the project. It was difficult to see any pit caves because it had been covered with dirt. On the right is a photo of the attempt to document any buried pit caves that might have been present. Next slide. In the early 2000s, during the Sunoto and Tichenor study, Board of Water Supply installed 3 wells in the project area. They were monitored by Sunoto and Tichenor, and the access roads to access the Board of Water Supply wells further graded areas of the project. On the right is the large graded area in the southwest portion of the project area. Next slide.
Well, Scott, really quick question. Yeah. That well you just showed in the earlier, is that where you guys would be getting the salt water from?
I'm not sure. That's a question for Board of Water Supply.
Okay, I'll ask it later.
That is correct, though. Yeah, that's where we get the water
from. Okay, thank you.
So these are photos of the exposed karst within the project area. The upper photo is a good representation of a previously previously undisturbed pit cave with soil along the bottom and very little infill. Bottom left is a good representative photo of what a large majority of the pit caves in the project area include, and those have been filled in with rubble, likely during the military occupation of the land, the grading of the roads and whatnot. And there's lots of debris and trash throughout the entire project area. On the upper right is another photo of, representative pit cave in the project area. Next slide. SIHP number 6373, which is on the south end of the project area, is a habitation complex, which has 3 features. The feature in the top left is a pit cave that has stacked coral boulders and cobbles around the outside. And behind it, you can see the feature that is also shown on the right, which is a some sort of a habitation feature, possibly an above ground oven or a storage cupboard or something of the sort. Next slide. The human burial that was identified along the edge of the canal is in a fairly large pit cave and covered with a large coral boulder. Next slide. SIHP number 6375, which is the pit cave complex. This shows a distribution of the 621 pit caves that we identified. With this, you can pretty clearly see the area of intensive survey up in the northeast corner, which shows a large cluster of historic properties, and then the representative portions identified outside of that. You'll notice no pit caves were identified in the southwest corner. That's that previously graded area. And you can pretty clearly see where the previously graded road extends up through grid 5 to grid 2 and then across to grid 3. Next slide. So the LIDAR survey, again, was an unmanned aircraft that basically documented the topography of the area. This figure is really great because it shows the 2 areas of exposed karst pretty clearly, as with large berms that largely because of the push of the original grading that kind of outline the outside, and those berms are shown in white. So it shows You also see on the right side of the project area where the World War II road cuts were, which you can see kind of white lines kind of extending parallel to the west. The survey identified a high number of pit caves, especially outside of the area of intensive survey, which helps supplement the distribution that we documented during the pedestrian inspection. While several of the potential pit caves were, determined not to be pit caves, the data was fairly similar to the data we collected during the pedestrian inspection. Next slide. So CSH conducted 11 grids for the ground penetrating radar survey within the previously graded road. During that, we identified 19 anomalies that are likely buried pit caves within that area. There was several areas with heavy metal refraction, large 50-gallon drums that have been buried within the pit caves. And several of these drums were also observed throughout the project area. Next slide. The three pit caves that were excavated during subsurface testing included feature 244, 260, and 136 within the project areas of intensive survey. These were selected largely due to the feasibility of entering the pit cave. They had soil along the bottom and not water, and were good candidates for subsurface testing. Next slide. During the excavation, we did half a meter by half a meter test units in the center of the units. In general, the findings were very similar to that of Sonoto and Tichenor. Numerous seabirds, rat, cowrie shells, turbinidae, conidae shells, and miter shells, crab claws, very indicative of pit caves in the area, paleoenvironmental pit caves in the area. We did find charcoal in feature 244 and sent that to radiocarbon dating, came back with dates ranging from the 17th century, the 18th century, and some probability of the 19th or 20th century. Next slide. Photos of the excavations within the pit caves. As you can see, some were fairly clear of good dirt, and others were infilled with rubble and covered with dirt. Next slide. Here's another close-up view of the stratigraphy of feature 260, which is also pretty indicative of pit caves in the area, and a photo of the, or a profile of the excavation within the pit cave. Next slide. So with the findings of the historic properties within the project area, the current project effect determination that's being proposed to SHPD is effect with proposed mitigation commitments. Those proposed mitigation commitments are archaeological monitoring and preservation of the human burial SIHP-4209, the habitation complex SIHP-6373, and a representative portion of 6375. Which is the pit cave complex. Next slide. So next steps is to submit the AIS report to SHPD for their review and comment. Upon completion of the AIS acceptance, we will complete the preservation plan and the monitoring plan, and the preservation plan will include consultation with cultural lineal descendants of the area as well as OHA. And due to federal involvement, there will be a Section 106 consultation that will occur as well. And with that, any questions?
Councilmember, any questions?
Hello, Scott. This is Mana. Mahalo for the presentation. Lots of information. Is there going to be a part of the AIS that addresses any, you know, possible buffers or anything for that burial that's within the project area? I know it's there was identified as inadvertent, and I'm not sure, you know, if any preservation plan was ever accepted, being that the original AIS wasn't accepted. So I just wanted to see how that folds into your guys' current work.
Yeah, so there was never, there was, you know, this was, you know, early in the SHPD or Historic Preservation Program. There is a report that the burials are there, but no burial site component or any plan to address the EV. In consultation with burial site specialist Regina Hilo, she determined that the appropriate step is for the project to conduct a preservation plan to protect the EV and set up those requirements.
Mana, that answers my question. Mahalo.
Mana, if I may, just to be clear, we will obviously go ahead with that preservation plan. But it's also important to note that I don't think you've actually been there. It's on the canal side of the access road away from our project. So one must never assume that construction will go as planned and that a, you know, disastrous mistake couldn't be made. But the reality is it is literally up against the wall of the canal. So even our machinery and big trucks are going to keep well away from that area just because of the, there's nothing bordering that canal on that side. And I don't know, we may even go in and consider putting up a temporary fence just to protect our own machinery and equipment. But I just wanted to bring up, you know, point out the fact that it is well away from our projected area of development.
Mahalo.
Also, just to everybody who is watching this presentation, the LIDAR survey is something that we've never done before, and it goes beyond what is considered current best practices. It may become a best practice, but I wanted to point out that we got approval from Ernie and budgetarily from Barry to do this because of our concern for the area, as well as our desire to be as absolutely thorough with the investigation of this project as possible. So this is one of those instances where we, you know, followed CSH's advice and decided to go through an even more intense survey program for this AIS. We can't say that we can always do this on projects or that it's always needed, but this was a really unique situation in that the current ground is a really gnarly, nasty Hiave forest that has literally grown on top of all of these pit caves, making it extraordinarily difficult to do what would normally be a surface inventory that is normally conducted. So just wanted to point out, we did this in part because we felt we needed to. And going back to the necessity of this project, the Board of Water Supply recognizes deeply that going forward to provide the people of Oahu with fresh, clean water at reasonable prices, we got to do this project.
Hey, council member, any other questions? Chuck.
Just a couple of technical ones to Alani. How many gallons of water is it going to, when this is in full operation, how many gallons is it going to produce?
I'm going to pull that one over to Barry Usagawa.
Yeah, hello, everyone. Barry Usagawa, Board of Water. I head the Water Resources Division. I'm the project manager for this project. 1.7 million gallons is what we intend to produce from this phase of this project. Give you a sense, 1 million gallons can serve about 2,500 single family homes, but it is going to be connected to the Campbell Industrial Park water system. So it would be consumed within the industrial park. So the refineries, the power plants, the warehouses there, they currently use a little over 2 million, almost 3 million a day. So it won't be going back up Kalailua. There is provisions for expansion in the future. We have no time frame on that, but potentially up to 5 MGD. As EVA's growth continues, that decision will be made in the future, probably past by 10 years. But 1.7 is what we are planning.
Thank you. I agree that this project is very much needed. Mahalo.
Mahalo. Scott and Barry, I had a question. Scott, in your presentation, you talked about a wastewater leach field being placed on the property. I just want to just get a better understanding of what is the purpose of the leach field, and if that leach field could perhaps end up flooding pit caves either on the project or off the project.
I can take that. Yeah. So the aerobic system and leach field is for the administrative building. It's basically just waste, you know, domestic.
Oh, wastewater.
Yeah.
Okay.
Gotcha. Yeah. So it'll be treated and then it'll be leached into the upper soil surface, and then yeah, that some of that will mostly be treated in the soil. The brine, when we pull out seawater from the wells and we put it through the demineralization process, it creates a brine. So half of it is fresh water, the other half is double concentrated salt water, and that would be disposed of in an injection well along Olai Street. That whole area, you may know, is an underground injection control area. So there are a number of injection wells. PAR has some, Kalailua power plant has several. So it's regulated and would have to be permitted through the Department of Health. But the leach field is primarily domestic.
Gotcha. Yeah, I thought it was related to the desalinization process for some.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Thank you. Council members, any other questions? Community members, any questions? Hearing none, thank you for your presentation. Scott, thank you, Barry. Thank you, Alani. We'll move on to our next item up on the agenda.
Just on behalf of the board, water supply, thanks everybody for the time. I know this was a lot of time, but we do appreciate your folks' attentiveness and willingness to engage. And as always, reach out to us if you folks have any questions going forward.
Hey, mahalo, Alani.
Mahalo nui. Aloha.
Mahalo. Okay. Next up on the agenda, item E, update on Kailua Beach Park District Operations Base Station Project, job number 20-P-1, ka ahupua'a o Kailua, ka moku o ko olau poko, ka ailana o Oahu, TMK, kahi ha, kolu, ole ole iwa, ole ole lua. Update about project by Cultural Survey Hawaii, Dr. Hal Hammond. And before we cut in with the presentation, I'd just like to make a quick announcement that one of our council members, Lynette Cruz, had to leave for another engagement. But just like for the minutes required, Lynette Cruz's departure from today's meeting. Okay, you can go ahead now.
Okay, thank you very much, Pamanao. This is a fairly simple project compared to the other ones previously. This is the Kailua Beach Park District Operations Ocean Safety Building Project located in Kailua. Next slide, please. It's right in the entrance to Ka'ohau, just upslope from the eastern side of Kailua Beach Park. It's a fairly small tenth of an acre project area, and it is the site of a proposed district operations base station sponsored by the Department of Emergency Services, Ocean Safety and Lifeguard Services Division. Currently, the site is a turnaround parking area And it's also the site of some temporary units for storage of lifeguard equipment. Next slide. The proposed building specifications include a rectangular structure measuring 60 feet long, 28 feet wide, with a height of 16 feet. And there have been very definite efforts in the design of this building to minimize ground disturbance, which will include a poured-in-place concrete slab on concrete spread footings. Next. Also, it includes a 1,680 square foot two office restroom, shower, and storage room, with which includes equipment repair, maintenance, garage, and equipment storage. Next slide, please. The project history. We presented this project to the Kailua Neighborhood Board in June 2018. We also completed a cultural impact assessment in May 2020, and we did outreach to the Kailua and Ka'ohau community, including people, Melody McKenzie, Kihei Da Silva and family, Herb Lee, Bosette Harms, and during this process, Kihei Da Silva suggested that we do an archaeological inventory survey. We did complete an archaeological literature review and field inspection in December 2019 with no historic properties identified. The Department of Design and Construction submitted a cover letter dated December 8th requesting concurrence for a project effect, and SHPD responded with a request for an archaeological inventory survey. Also, the special management application SMA permit, since it is by the ocean, was approved on April 15th, 2021. The archaeological The archaeological literature review and field inspection was completed in 2019, and it included a pedestrian inspection of the study area extending Mauka approximately 500 feet, and no surface archaeological features were identified. To explain the map a little bit, there's the blue area, which is the expanded expands Mauka of the project area. The red shows the actual project area, and the yellow area, slightly larger than the project area, was covered by the field inspection. Next slide, please. Just to cover the soils in the project area, we have what's known as Kokokahi, very stony clay, which covers the Mauka portion, the upslope portion, and the lower west portion, which includes the a utility line extending eastward, westwards, goes into a little bit of Jauka sand. Next slide, please. Showing a detail here, the sewer line extending into the main portion of the beach park and extending into the road. The proposed trenching for the archaeological inventory survey includes a trench which will be in the deepest part of the proposed sewer line, and one in the new building footprint, and a third one will be depending on findings and consultation with descendants and other parties. By the way, the AIS plan was approved by SHPD on August 6, 2021. Next slide, please. The literature review, field inspection, and the cultural impact assessment were completed in 2020. The SHPD approved the inventory survey plan on August 6, 2021. and we're planning for the archaeological inventory survey to begin soon. And we will continue the outreach to the Kailua descendants, consultation letters, and interested parties will be sent out soon. And next slide. Well, I think that's the last one. And I just wanted to know if there are any questions.
Mahalo, Dr. Hammett. Council members, any questions?
Yeah, I'd just like to know why only two test trenches are being proposed. It seems like the site might warrant more than that.
That's a good question, Chuck. If there are any findings in this area, we're always open to doing more trenches. And I would say the answer to that question depends on the findings of the two trenches. And obviously the sensitive area would be the area that extends into the lower portion towards the beach park, which is the sewer line.
Okay, mahalo.
Council members, any more questions? Hearing none, community members, any questions on this project? Hearing aloha. None. Oh, go ahead.
Aloha, kamana. Oh, it's Ian Masterson.
Aloha.
Aloha, how? Nice to see you.
Good to see you, Ian.
All right. Just one quick question is, it's close to Alala Heiau, the former location. Is that a consideration at all? Just a thought. I'm very happy the lifeguards get such a great location, by the way.
Oh, yes. Thank you. I think that's considerably upslope. We're aware of the location of that major site. And I think it's included in our study, the awesome. Mention of it.
Great. Thanks.
Yeah. Thank you, Ian. Thank you for your interest.
At the bottom of that hill right there. So she lived right by the house, the corner house. So.
Right. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Nice to see you. Aloha.
Aloha, Ian.
Aloha. Are there community questions? Hearing none, thank you so much for your presentation, Dr. Hammett.
Okay. Thank you. Coming up. Aloha.
Mahalo.
Okay, next we have item 6, reports, updates, and requests. And first item on the agenda is the update on Oahu Island Borough Council membership roles and responsibilities. Let me see really quickly if is the Attorney General still on the line?
Yes, I believe I still
okay. Well, hi. Yeah, in our last Oahu Island Borough Council meeting, we were discussing the possibility of having the Attorney General present during our meetings. And knowing that you folks are really, really busy, want to explore this possibility. And if not for the full meeting, maybe a portion of the meeting, say the beginning of the meeting, where we could potentially ask questions or not. I wanted to have this quick discussion with you to see if you're available.
Okay, so there are 3 deputies in my office who, kind of advise the burial council when they have questions. That's me, Cindy Young, who is just here, and Linda Chow, who's our supervisor. I'm the newest one, so I'm not really, as experienced as Cindy and Linda. I think what we've been doing, at least for this burial council, is when there are meetings where questions are anticipated. Linda, ahead of time, if she can have someone, either me or Cindy or herself, there, at least during the period when there are going to be questions. I don't think that we have the capacity to always have someone there. So I think it would still be good to kind of look at your agenda and figure out, if there are foreseeable questions. and to try to make a request to Linda as soon as possible if you need someone there. That's kind of what I know about our, you know, what we've done and what we can still do going forward.
Okay, so the game plan is whenever this council needs AG advice, we would consult with Leslie, and Leslie would call you to come be at the, because sometimes there may be items that just pop up, and where we don't have it pre-planned that we wanted to speak with Attorney General.
Right. So if there is like something that comes up and we're not at the meeting, yeah, I think, you know, like what happened today, Leslie emailed Linda, and then Linda was herself in a meeting, so she tried to see if Cindy and I could be there to answer. And even if, you know, it's not like today where I could actually join the meeting, we usually try to, you know, we try to answer by email as quickly as we can too. So if something comes up during a meeting and we're not there, yeah, definitely ask Leslie to pose the question to us.
Okay. Council members, are we okay with this arrangement? Any questions or concerns?
You know, it's Chair, you had a good idea for us to, if we do have any questions, we could prepare to ask them at the beginning of the meeting, so that they would be in attendance at least for the first 15 minutes of the meeting. I don't think that's unreasonable, especially if they know, as an example, we're going to be on again in September 8th. They could make their schedules available at least for the first 15 to minutes to a half. Now, I think you might want to check with the AG on that. This for the deputy AG too.
Would that be a possibility, Lauren? I'm sure you have to check with your supervisor.
Yeah. So let me ask Linda if she's okay with that. And I guess we'll work with Leslie probably.
Yeah, because if that arrangement works out, we can move this agenda item, the update on OIBC membership roles responsibility, back to the first position, like how we had it on the agenda, and we can consult with the AGs at that point.
Also,
so, yes,
go ahead. I think that's a good idea, but also you and I guess I learned from Leslie the other day that you and I are given draft copies of the agenda, and you and I on our own go through it. If we see any items that need to be red flagged, we could do it then and pass it on to Leslie, and she can pass it on to whoever.
Right.
Yeah, and I think you also, you know, you can take agenda items out of order. I mean, yeah, if you had something standing at the beginning, that's fine too. But if, you know, if something comes up, you know, it just depends on how you wanna hear items that day.
Any other questions from the council?
Yeah, so I have a question. Sure. I was wondering, you know, the minutes from the previous meetings are, there's a number of months that are, that need to be reviewed and approved or left in draft, whatever happens to them. But there's a number of us that are new on council. So do we approve the back minutes or just the minutes that were that we had were on board?
Yeah, you know, I'm not sure. Who are the new members?
Okay, I started in May, and I think Nainea Lowe started in May, and Brickwood and Lynette Cruz last month, right, Brickwood? You started last month, yeah.
I just started.
So, and then also there's the members that are no longer here that were, there must be maybe over 10 months that they were not privy to any of the minutes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so yeah, let me check on that, because I'm not sure if there's gonna be an issue. You know, like you don't have to vote on them if you don't feel comfortable with it, but let me see if there's gonna be an issue like with quorum. If you know there are so many new members that they wouldn't be able to know what's gone on in a meeting, you know, whose minutes that they're voting on. So let me check on that.
Bear in mind, I'm sorry, Diane. Bear in mind, there's 1 year of minutes that have not been approved. Okay, just for your information.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. So I'll be in touch with Leslie about that.
Yeah, I put it on my to-do list as well. Okay. Any other questions for the Attorney General? Okay. Other things we have from follow-ups from last month. There was a request by the council to request the boards and commissions attendance at this meeting. And unfortunately, the boards and commissions stated that they will not be in attendance of the meeting. And they did, so we requested a written response that we could read before the commission and the general public. To be quite honest, I don't think it's worth anyone's time, but this, I'll read it. This is from boards and commission. It says, as for Hina, she was on holdover status. The governor decided her services were no longer needed and excused her from further service. As for Ali'i, he simply resigned for personal reasons. And that's the only response I got in writing from boards and commissions. Okay. Council members, any questions?
Is there any way to just request them to come? I don't know, so that we can have like maybe an open Q&A session with them, either with the public or closed session.
Yes, I can ask again, attendance at the next.
Thank you.
Did I get your request correctly, Nanea? It's a request again of boards of commissions to attend?
Yes.
Okay, gotcha. Okay, let me see. Do I have any other outstanding items? I guess some AGE boards and commission.
Okay. Chair, I have to leave. I appreciate it. Thank you all.
Okay. Thank you for your time, Commissioner Galateria.
Aloha.
Aloha. Oh, question for Leslie. Last month, we moved all of the inadvertent discoveries to this agenda for Regina to speak on. But I checked our attendance records, and I don't see Regina here. Will we be going over the inadvertent discoveries?
Yes, I just received an email from Regina, and so she won't be attending this meeting. Something else has come up. What she did say, though, is if anyone does have questions pertaining to those inadvertent discoveries, to go ahead and email her, and then she will reply via that venue. Mahalo.
Okay, mahalo nui. Okay, let me see. Council members, does anyone have any updates regarding membership roles and responsibilities?
There's also the poll for the training.
Oh, that's right. That's right.
And Shifty. Ekalamai.
Yeah, that was right on top of my list and I completely overlooked it. So in the month of September, there's going to be an AG training session for all Island Burial Council members. And so the idea was is to see if we could solidify a date that we could go to the training. Unfortunately, Lynette and Brickwood had just left. Leslie, is it possible to do a doodle poll with the council members to see which is a good date in September to conduct the training? It'll be a 3-hour training. That's not going to be on an active OIBC agenda. In fact, Lauren, is it possible for us to do a doodle poll with the OIBC members?
Yeah, I think, you know, if everyone just separately, emails Leslie with their availabilities, I think, you know, I think that's probably safest so that the members aren't communicating with each other and just to Leslie.
Okay. Well, let me just, let's talk about it and throw out a few dates right now since the commission members are here.
It's not the 8th, yeah?
Yes, it's not going to be on September 8th. How about the week of September 20th to the 24th? Maybe the 22nd of September?
Let me double check. I think that's free for me.
September 22nd. That's fine.
Okay. All right. That's awesome. Let's shoot for September 22nd from 9 to 12 p.m.
Perfect. Thank you, everyone.
And then... awesome. Okay, council members, any other items for membership roles and responsibilities? Any announcements?
Well, I wanted to ask about the approval for minutes. Is it by law, or I guess this is for Lauren, is it by law if a council member wasn't a council member at the point that the minutes were made, that then we don't have like the privilege to approve the method or the minutes, the meeting minutes at the time?
That's something that I'll be checking on. So I'll email Leslie about that.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, moving on the agenda. Next we have, and I'm not sure if, oh, go ahead.
Hello, my aloha, this is Kala'i.
Hi, aloha.
So I just wanted to say, I think this makes the case for moving this particular agenda item to the top of the agenda because we eventually, sometimes we lose members, right? So we lost today before all of this discussion. So I think that's why it was at the top. So that it can be discussed before we really get into business. So I'm just suggesting that it might be a good time to move this item back up to the top. Mahalo.
Aye, mahalo nui. Yeah, I concur with you, Kamuela. And I think if the AG does decide or not, it should still be at the top of the agenda since there are pertinent updates to give to the council before the meeting. Okay, next up on the agenda, we have an update on the Office of Hawaiian Affairs Burial Sites Working Group as per Hawaii State Legislature Senate Resolution 171 and House Resolution 113 to examine the burial sites program under the Department of Land and Natural Resources State Historic Preservation Division and improvements to the Island Burial Councils. This was recently established. I'm not sure if there's any updates, but are there any updates?
Aloha, Kamanao. Just as a reminder, the council had nominated and voted me to be the representative of the OIBC on this working group, and also Lynette Cruz to be the alternate representative. I have not received any reply from the Office of Hawaiian Affairs yet, giving any direction or timeline or schedule. Like I'm not even sure if they've officially got the people yet, you know, everybody who applied to be on this working group. So I myself don't have any updates.
Mahalo nui, mana. Mana, what would be your recommendation? Should be because one of the plans was to have this a standing item on the agenda. Should we copy this until the YBC?
Go ahead. I think it's pretty safe to leave it on the agenda. I believe there was some verbiage in the letters that went out saying that they would convene in September sometime. And gotcha. You know, if you open up the floor to Mana'o from the Kaya'ulu, there are a few members in the audience that have been working on things to help support and kako'o people in the community to give testimony when this working group does convene. So I'll leave that up to you, Chair.
Does anyone from the community have any updates regarding this item? Okay, moving on.
I just had a thought. It's Kala'i again. So I'm wondering if it is possible for Lynette to attend the meetings with Mana as an alternate, but I think she expressed a lot of interest in being a part of this working group. And I think it would only benefit herself as well as Mana, if Mana can't attend a meeting, she's got something else to do, that, you know, they can back each other up, but that she would be fully apprised of what's happening so that she just doesn't jump in on a meeting that, you know, and just come in the void, not knowing what had been discussed prior to that. And of course, it would be, you know, with her permission, but I'm wondering if that's possible, that they could both attend these meetings as the member and the alternate. I don't know.
All right. I think we shared that same sentiment in last month. I'm checking to see if Kai Markel is on.
Hey, Kalamai Kamanao. So we had that discussion as well at Shifty, and the answer that came back was that it's not possible. A way to work around it would be if Mana could have a meeting shortly after and update her on what had happened. But when they're going to be in the meeting, it's specific people that are there, and that would be all. So that's all they're allowing into the Zoom meeting. Mahalo.
Mahalo, Leslie. Council any Manal.
I have a question. So it's Kala'i again. So whose rule is that? Is that an actual rule that says only one member from every OIBC can be in attendance? Is that an actual rule? If it is, I'd like to see it. Leslie, I guess question is for you.
Is that for me? Okay. In the resolution, it asks only for specific people. And so that would be the only people that can attend that meeting.
In the resolution?
That is the only answer I was given, yes.
Yeah, that's not a satisfactory answer, but mahalo.
Mahalo.
Kamuela, let me go talk to Kai. I'll put that on my to-do list.
Mahalo.
Okay, mahalo nui. Okay, next on the agenda, we have the update for Kauaiahao Church Multi-Purpose Building Renovation Project. Ahupa'o Honolulu, Kamakua Kona, Ka'ailana O'ahu, TMK 12103-2017. Are there any updates on this project?
This is Suzanne. Aloha.
Aloha.
The church will be hosting a Kukakuka on the 21st at 10 a.m. and that will include a presentation from Hawaiian Dredging on their plans for the kanu. And then I also have a request, Chair, for clarification. The AIS document was deemed sensitive by the OIBC, and as such, it's exempt from public disclosure requirements of section of the HR 92F-12. Access to sensitive records shall be allowed by written consent of the council, where the SHPTI needs to review the record to protect the burial site from harm, notify lineal and cultural descendants of the harm, and evaluate the ethnicity and significance of the burial sites located by. The church has received a request for burial site descriptions, and I have those numbers. And we would like to comply, but we have been told that we cannot, even though it's part of that family's kuka for the kanu. So we're kind of mixed. Do they need to request written permission from the OIBC? They are lineal descendants to several of the burials and cultural to the other ones. And nobody else has come forward to kuka those burials.
So they're asking for description of the burials from the archaeological inventory survey.
Correct. I'd like to just get a stipulation from council that says for the cultural and lineal descendants that the church is able to release that information because it's pertinent to them for planning the condom.
Council members, any Manao?
Hello, Chair Suzanne. This is Mana. Is you're asking permission to release the information to the public, to the SHPTI, or to the recognized descendants on the 21st?
No, not on the 21st. This is individual requests that come in for from recognized descendants for the burial finds that they will be doing the kanu of.
As I understand it, family A wants to come in and get from the AIS a description of their of the burial finds associated with their family.
Correct.
I personally, I see no harm in doing that, and they should have rights to that information. That's my. I think when we decided that it was that it should be held in private, there were bigger issues there. We didn't want it to go out to the general public and all, but you know, when we're talking about a specific lineal descendant or whatever, I mean, I think that's a whole different issue.
In full disclosure, we have released two areas which they had lineal descendancy on, but where they're cultural descendants, that's where we have not released the information as yet. And I'm seeking permission to do that on an as needed basis.
For cultural.
From the community. Kamuela, what's your thoughts?
Oh, that's a hard one. It's a tough one to answer. I think the church needs to use its best judgment, especially, it's a tough one. I know that if it was me and I knew that was my kupuna, but I couldn't prove it, and I, you know, wanted more information, I request it. But yeah, if you're not a lineal descendant, there's different rules that apply. So I don't have an answer. I don't. I know what I would want to have done if it was me, but I'm not in that position. So I think whoever the ohana is, they have to make a case, you know, with the church, and if it becomes a bigger mo'olelo, which is why I think Suzanne is coming to the council for advice, then that's the way to go to get your folks to get your approval for it, because it is sensitive, very sensitive. But thank you for asking.
I'm wondering, is the Attorney General still on the line? This is what I'm thinking. Is it out of my jurisdiction to put this on the next agenda and to speak with the family, the Ohana?
I think that you can do that. I'm sorry. I'm a little confused about what records are being requested and from whom.
This is the archaeological inventory of the Kwaiahao Church, the multi-purpose building renovation project. There are a number of burials that were discovered under there. And those burial discoveries were deemed very, very sensitive, and very, very private. And so we did not want that report to be distributed openly due to the contents within regarding the burials. One of the cultural descendants has come forward now requesting excerpts of that archaeological inventory survey for the purposes of, I guess, gaining information to do the kanu properly. And my thought is I would not mind having that ohana come before the council to make the request, but I also don't want to overstep my jurisdiction or my cultural sensitivity amongst with the council members. Council members, you folks have any thoughts, ideas, or suggestions?
I have something. Okay, when the AIS first came out, all of the cultural and lineal descendants were given access to the entire AIS. But after it was approved, there's only a public copy online now. So say our ohana had took on the kuleana to do a certain area of the reburial and needs to basically see the sizes and what it will involve. So to have the information of the original AIS, especially when it comes to Moipu, for the lineal descendant part, that we would like to have a look again at the original AIS.
Okay, so it sounds like the original AIS with the sensitive information was already made public at some point.
No, it was only available for the lineal and cultural descendants.
Okay.
It's not available anymore.
Okay. Yeah, I'm looking at the rule about access to sensitive records, and I see where it says it shall be allowed by written consent of the appropriate council or review board. But then it says only where the department needs to review the record to protect the burial site from harm. Notify known lineal or cultural descendants of the harm or evaluate the ethnicity burial sites approximately located. So that part of the rule makes it seem that it's only the department that can make the request to review the record. So I'll have to...
So the department would have to request it from the council.
That's what the rule seems to say. I'm not sure how that relates to, the 92F provision about, when the public requests records. So I'll have to look into this further as well. But I think if the council wants to hear directly from the people requesting it, I don't think there's anything that would prevent you from, putting that on your agenda. I guess you could, vote at that time.
So the church cannot release the information until it goes on the OIBC agenda to a cultural or lineal descendant. Is that what you're telling me?
I'm sorry. So this is the church's record that we're talking about, not a government.
It's the AIS.
Yeah. Yeah, the okay. Archaeological Inventory Survey is drafted up by Cultural Surveys Hawaii, and technically it's the property of the church.
Oh,
but okay. SHPD has a copy of the AIS.
I see. Okay, well, in that case, I mean, I think that it's the church's decision whether to release it or not. Sorry, I thought that the request was coming to SHPD or to the Burial Council directly for their records. But if it's a request for a record of a private entity, then it's up to that entity whether to release it or not.
Laura, it's maybe K-Hall. We should check.
Go ahead. So the typical practice is it's considered public record once it goes to SHPD. If there's a request made and part of the information is sensitive, it's just redacted out. So it's otherwise considered a public record. So the question becomes, if people are seeking information that's otherwise usually redacted by law, but if
okay, they have, I see.
Yeah, so but it's otherwise considered a public record.
Okay, okay. Yeah, so I guess then the church doesn't have the access to that protected information, then they can't release it.
No, well, I have access.
They have the information.
Okay, but it's,
but it's redacted from public when the SHPD copy.
What usually happens is if there are cultural and lineal descendants, that information is, the AIS will be shared with cultural and lineal descendants. But it's marked on the report that it's sensitive information protected under whatever the statute or admin is and is not to be further distributed. So that's how we do it when we're sharing with recognized cultural and lineal descendants.
Okay, thank you, Tricia. Let me go with Chuck Erhorn and then Bill Haole.
Yeah, just a little bit of background. This issue, Mana, correct me if I'm wrong, probably goes back at least 1.5 years. And it's because the AIS came out, the original draft, and some of the cultural lineal descendants saw that and said, wait a moment, I don't want you talking about my tutu in this manner out in the public. So we wanted it to be, the decision was made to redact those kind of personal family ohana issues so that the general public wouldn't get it. Now I'm trying to summarize what I'm hearing here. Now the church wants to know, okay, so those families who want information on their family background that was stated in the AIS, can we give them information? The issue is, do we give that information to both cultural and lineal descendants, just lineal descendants, or what? Now, I believe that lineal descendants is fine because by definition, they have rights. I think it's the issue is, do we release it to the cultural descendants? And personally, I would like to hear from the whole group of lineal and cultural descendants. I don't know how often they meet. But if they could meet and discuss and come up, give us some input as to what we need to do on this issue. Mahalo.
Mahalo, Chuck. Bill.
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. You know, I'm going back to Diane's request. If it, you know, for the purpose of getting the appropriate size so that they could consider to be included in the final kanu, I think that can be done because all the baskets are available for measurements without having to go to the AIS. I agree with Chuck's summary of what took place. There were some very graphic information that people didn't feel comfortable being in. So a redacted version was posted on our website so that they at least had limited access to the information. However, the full disclosure had to be filed with the SHPD, and that's where, because of the previous discussion, it was listed as sensitive and filed as it was. So to help Diane out, I think we can still accommodate by giving her the size of each one of the baskets that you're considering to Malama. in addition to your own. And personally, I agree, if it's a lineal descendant that's requesting information for their ohana, their particular ohana idol, but you know, it's not a decision, as Suzanne rightly said, that we are willing to make it on our own. We brought it, we think the burial council and the descendants, recognized descendants, should have a say in that. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's see.
Uh-oh.
Hi, aloha Lani.
Hi, aloha Lani Ma'olapilio Akahi for the church. Thank you everyone for considering this matter. I'm glad you're all here. Lauren, this is a AIS that was accepted. So it's a SHPTI record, yeah. And in this case, the burial council voted to deem these records sensitive. So in that situation, it's a bit different. The good part is that, as Suzanne mentioned, we are having a meeting with the recognized descendants on the 21st. So we're happy to include that on the agenda so we could have a discussion. And if we need further discussion, we can agendize it at the next meeting of the Burial Council. So the thing is that there is a law on point. It's not really on point, government records, Lauren, as you mentioned. So that's why I really needed guidance. So that's why we're here today asking, because as Chuck mentioned, you know, it's really a personal family matter. So we need to get the mana'o of all the descendants. Yeah, lineal and cultural. Mahalo.
Yeah, thank you so much, Lani. Yeah, that'd be a great suggestion. If it can be brought up to in the next meeting of the descendants and get back to the council, that'd be greatly appreciated. Thank you.
Mahalo.
I have nothing else.
Thank you.
So can we put that on the agenda for the next meeting?
Let's see. The Lani, the date again for the consultation?
August 21st.
August 21st.
For recognized descendants, both cultural and lineal. And Suzanne mentioned that we'll be having a presentation by Hawaiian Dredging with details on how they propose to go about with the kanu of the burial. So that meeting is from 10 to 12. So we'll have that included on the agenda for all the descendant input as well.
Yeah, to me, the reason why I asked is because I remember when we were, and I believe it might've been in the OIBC meeting where after the AIS was no longer going to be available for the descendants to look at, that because of the redactions and everything, but that Kauai Hau would have a copy of the AIS where as descendants, we could come and basically ask for copies or to look at the AIS that was really privy to the lineal and cultural descendants. So that's the reason I asked. I didn't ask just to ask. There was some background to this. So yeah, we need to get it clarified and we'll see what happens.
Yeah. Because no matter what, this if it comes before the Oahu Island Burial Council, what the council's first step is do is we will ask the question, what did the lineal and cultural descendants think? So and if you're meeting with the lineal cultural descendants on August 21st, yes, on our behalf, ask them what are their mana'o, and please, in our September 8th meeting, if you could provide us that information, we'll follow up in the next meeting.
Mahalo.
Mahalo.
Kalo mai, ka mana'o. All
right.
So I have one more little comment. So if it's a matter of looking at the AIS, reviewing it, we have already seen everything that was in there, which is why we asked to take the sensitive information out. So if it's just a matter of reviewing that AIS again with all the information, me personally, I don't have a problem with that because we've already seen it. Just my mana'o. Mahalo.
Mahalo. Yeah, and I guess we would need that clarification as well. Does the cultural descendants want to see it, or if they want, actually want a copy of it?
Suzanne and Lonnie, will you guys be emailing the burial council with that information about the meeting and the Zoom, or is it in person?
It's right now it's a Zoom platform. We're hoping to be able to do it hybrid in person. Depends on the COVID numbers, whether or not we're able to do a hybrid meeting. But right now it's open to the recognized descendants, not to the OIBC members, if they are not part of the recognized descendant group.
Oh, okay.
For the, Mr. Chair, for the sake of the burial council, for the sake of the new burial council members, I believe the Sunshine Law prohibits more than two members from burial councils to attend these consultation meetings with descendants. But correct me if I'm wrong, Lauren.
Thank you for that clarification.
Any other updates regarding the Quail Hollow Church multi-purpose center, building renovation project?
Yes, I have a question.
All right.
Let you again. So is Suzanne Boatman still on the call?
I am.
Hi, Suzanne. This is Kala'i. So been trying to get an answer to this question for the last three OIBC meetings. And since you're here, maybe you can help clarify it. I'm just wondering whether or not Koiaho'o Church plans to contest lineal descendants to Iwikupuna at Koiaho'o.
You know, I've answered that question to you several times in emails back in April, and it keeps coming up. So my answer has not changed at all. You know, I can't comment on ongoing legal issues, but as something comes up, it either meets the criteria or it doesn't. And if the church feels that it doesn't meet the criteria, then it goes into a legal matter. So I cannot comment on that. We have no plans to actively do that. But I, you know, you're trying to box me into something that I can't answer any more than I have. I can pull up the email and give you the answer that I gave you, if that would help.
No, I remember your email. The reason I have been asking this question is because Bill Ha'oli stated, at least at two meetings, that they were that the church was planning to contest all lineal descendants. So your answer and his answer conflict. So I'm just trying to get.
I'm the chair of the board. So, you know, I stand by what I told you. And if it meets the requirements, then we would not contest it. If there's question about that, then, you know, that's open. But we are so focused, and I do not want to lose focus. We are so focused on the Kanu to go back to that point in history. I don't want to spend the time or energy on that. I want to move forward and I want to focus solely on the Kanu. And that's where my thoughts
As do I, Suzanne. That is the entire focus and the goal is to focus on the Kanu. And so thank you for your answer. And we just ho'omau, mahalo. Well,
thank you so much. I'm not trying to be perverse or mean. It's just that I don't want to go back there and dwell on that. There's so much to be done that I want to put all of my energy into moving forward.
Okay. Yeah, and I absolutely understand that, and I mahalo you for that. And this is for me is a big thing to get over, so we can ho'omau, because it's been bothering me, because it's been stated publicly in a meeting that unfortunately you were not in attendance, but by the church representative that they were going to challenge. And so, if it's on a case by case basis and there's no focus on it, then I'm good with that.
Hallelujah.
Yeah. So mahalo nui. Okay.
Mahalo,
yeah, thank you.
Okay. Moving forward on the agenda, we have the update for burials located at 49-051 Johnson Road, Hakipu'uka, Olapo'o District, Island of Oahu, TMK 149003002. In this item, there was a request from in our last meeting by the Kolea Ohana to give the new members a PowerPoint presentation on the EV at 49-051 Johnson Road. Kolea Ohana.
Aloha,
council and community.
Our ohana has been sidelined by COVID the last few weeks, and then because the 2 weeks between this meeting came up so quick. So I actually hadn't sent in the PowerPoint to Leslie and really didn't realize the meeting was already coming up until last night. So I didn't have time to even email Leslie to let her know that we were going to have to hold off. But sorry.
No, yeah. I'll put this. Are you okay with putting this up on the next agenda?
Yeah, September works. Sorry about that.
No, Oli Pilikia. Okay. Kolea Ohana, I had a quick question for you. Right now, this Johnson Road project, it's on every agenda. Did you want to continue to have it on the agenda every month, or did you want to do it by demand only?
We could just do it by request.
Yeah. By request.
Yeah.
Because I hate it if you have to sit through the hours of meeting and there's no update. So if there is an update, you just let us know, then we can put it on the agenda.
Okay.
Yeah.
But you'll be on for next agenda.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Mahalo nui.
Okay. Mahalo nui.
Okay, next we have we're not at the inadvertent discoveries yet. So right now we're on the update of unidentified human skeletal remains at a burial cave on Pupukea Road, Pupukea Ahupua'a Ko'olauloa District, Island of Oahu, TMK 15903304. Update from community members.
Aloha, Sky here.
Hi, Sky.
I've been talking with Regina concerning this, and I think we're still waiting on the Department of Transportation to commit to some kind of plan to seal the caves. Just to catch everybody up to speed who is new on the board, the caves were found a few months back. We ended up finding out that a burial council vote said that the caves, it was recommended for them to be sealed. So the burial treatment plan was written that they would be sealed in 2011, I believe. Nothing has happened. The caves were never sealed. They have been used for houseless individuals. There's been drug paraphernalia next to Iwikupuna. So my nonprofit organization has been active in that space, making sure that the Kupuna are safe and protected, but the problem is going to keep happening until the cave is sealed. And I think Regina is just working out a plan with DOT. Questions?
No questions. I guess the same thing for the 49-051 Johnson Road. This is, I think this items E and F are ongoing on the agenda. Did you want it to continue for the next several months, or do you want to make it by only if something happens and then?
Yeah, I feel like if I'm present, I'll gladly talk on it. If I'm not here, it's okay to skip over me. But if it drops off, then like the pressure of making sure DOT is committing to this and Regina is able to keep up, I don't want to lose momentum.
Okay.
So like, I would prefer it to stay on.
Okay, got it. The Pupu Care will remain. Following that, you want to go right into F? This is for the Kaneohe Bay, the Marine Corps Air Base project.
Okay, so for Mokapu stuff, just with the shift in tide of who's on the council now, I fully trust everybody that is present right now, but I'm just going to come with updates. I am not looking for any advice or anything. I just want to make sure the community knows what's going on. I know there's people present that weren't able to get in the 90s on the lineal descendant list through NACRA. So I just want to make sure you guys know where we're at, and you can always reach me if anybody has any questions or concerns about it. But we're good on the help, and I just want it to stay at that. I don't need the Ko'ola Poko rep helping. We're good. They are working on a plan to build new sections for the school. They have been really good about including the families. Myself and one other descendant have been very active in that. there has been three new inadvertents that they have actually allowed us to go on the moment they were found, to go on base and do our protocol. We have gotten them to preserve in place for those individuals. And so the tide is shifting. The military has been listening a bit better. We've been having more open conversations. The descendants, you know, this project has been going for project, which is what they would term it, but has been happening for 20 years. And we've lost a little steam with the descendants. Everybody's kind of coming back into the fold. And we're actively pushing and communicating.
Mahalo. Is there any questions for Sky?
Sky, this is Mana. I just wanted to say a big mahalo. And as Chuck will probably follow me in saying, it's been many years that we've been waiting for any type of, not even good news. We just don't want to hear bad news. So hearing you share the information that, you know, one, you know, the tide is shifting, the fact that they're preserving Kupuna in place, that this kind of, you know, up until you said that, that's unknown over there. It's like you find Kupuna, you move it. So mahalo nui, Sky.
Aloha. Yeah, I think I pulled 20 years of reports. These are the first three Kupuna that would be preserved in place in 20 plus years. So this is huge for us. It was, I mean, it was an amazing experience to be there and to do our protocol and everything. And my whole Ohana was there, and it was needed. And it was really healing for the descendants who have had a lot of issues with each other, with just, and you know, the military is playing us against each other, and we all are aware of that. And I think when we had the opportunity to do this culturally correct, it just total shift. Everybody, we're on one team, we're moving, and it's been amazing. Yeah.
I think Mana summarized my comments, but I do want to say, Sky, that it's good that we have a contact person there that comes and gives us updates every once in a while. So mahalo for that.
Mahalo, Sky. And same with the pupukia. I'll leave this up on the agenda for future meetings. Okay, next we have request from Kamuela Kala'i to discuss inadvertent discovery of human skeletal remains on October 2nd, 2020, located at Kanenelu Beach in Ka'a'aba, Ahupua'a of Ka'a'aba, Ko'olapo'o District, Island of Oahu, TMK 151-011051. Kamuela?
Hey, mahalo nui. Leslie, did you get my picture of the Kanenelu coastline that you can put up? I emailed it to you, and I think I texted it to you too. But anyway, I'm not sure if Regina is on this call, so she could give us an update. So I guess for this particular agenda item, I'm still wanting to get an update on when the DOT plans to start mitigation measures of this area, because there are at least three Iwi Kupuna that we know of that are in this area where the sands are washing out from the high tides and the surf. And I, from what I'm hearing, DOT does plan to go in there and shore everything up, shore that coastline up to prevent any further erosion. It's really dangerous right now. The roadside is actually, parts of it have fallen in. That's how much erosion is happening. And I'm pretty sure there's more than just the three Iwi Kupuna that we have already discovered or have revealed themselves to us. So if Regina's on the call, then maybe she can update us. If not, then I'll move on. And the reason that I'd like an update is because prior to DOT coming in, I'm hoping that some decisions will be made about the preserving the two Iwi Kupuna that were first uncovered in January. Are now, we have sandbags holding that part of that coastline in so that no more erosion happens. And I know initially Regina had said that she wanted to just preserve them in place. But one of the po'o was recovered from one of the kupuna. So I guess we need to talk about that, because going to preserve them in place would definitely, hopefully, like to be able to reunite the Po'o with the rest of the Kino. So those are some of the questions that I have, but I'm not sure if Regina's on the call or not. Do you know? Probably not. Yeah. Okay. So, hopefully we'll get some answers next time. She did tell me that the latest update was that the DOT had moved their project to maybe further down the road to December, possibly, because they were supposed to start this month. So anyway, so can't really do anything without Regina's input on that.
Yeah. Okay. Apologize, Kamala.
No, no, it's okay. It's okay. I know Regina's super busy. So the other question can we go on to the next agenda item?
Item H.
Yeah. So I don't have the agenda in front of me, but two of the things that I'm asking, so H and I are related. So there are at least 5 burials that were recovered in October of 2020. There were 2 more burials that were exposed in January of 2021. And there was an entire full-bodied Iwikupuna that washed out of its burial grave March 10th. So those are 3 sites that I personally am aware of. There are other sites that in prior years, Iwikupuna have been recovered or discovered in this area. But those are the 3 that I personally am going to request, because I personally know of these burials, that if I'm asking the OIBC if they could possibly designate these Iwikupuna. They're all designated as inadvertent discoveries, even though over time many Iwikupuna have been recovered from this area. So I'm asking, number 1, can these Iwikupuna, and they number 5, 2, 8 Iwikupuna, the 3 separate burial sites, can they be designated as previously identified and not inadvertent, because they're not inadvertent? And then can their burial sites, these 3 particular burial sites, be designated as known burial sites? And so that's my request to the Burial Council to begin with. So that, and the reason I'm asking is so that these sites will be afforded more protection in the future. And not only the sites, but the immediate surrounding areas, because we know historically, if there's 1 kupuna or 2 kupuna buried in an area very close together, likelihood there's going to be more kupuna buried next to them. So I don't know. Does that make sense?
So quick question, Kamuela. These 8 burials, where are they now? Are they preserved in place?
No, the five burials that were taken out in October of 2020 are at Honua Consulting's facility, I believe in Kamiki. The 2 Iwikupuna that were exposed in January, those are preserved in place because we put sandbags. Otherwise, they would have washed out by now. They would have washed out of that particular area because the tides were crazy. With the exception, when Regina came down to check it out, the po'o of 1 of those kupuna was recovered. So, and then the other kupuna, the full body kupuna in March 10th, that is when Ian and I, it was storming that night. That is when the mountain came crashing down, and there was a landslide by Kualoa. And this kupuna was literally in danger of, it was already washing out. There's just torrential water coming from across the road from the waterfalls and the rain. So that Iwikupuna has been recovered. So 1 full body and 1 po'o. The other 2 are still preserved in place, and 5 have been recovered already.
I have Manao, but first off, council members, any Manao? Or any comments? Just speaking for me, and I actually reiterate what Mana had said last month, which was there are some benefits of it being designated as an inadvertent discovery. You can act on the preservation right away. You can get them put back in the ground much quicker. By identifying them as previously identified, we go down a path of documentation, of burial treatment plans that could take months and months for it to complete.
So I understand that. And I'll tell you right now, as working with Oli'i Mitchell, who is a cultural descendant, and with the community members that have come out to help protect these burials and still come out to check on these burials to see what's happening out there, it's been months and months with what they call the inadvertent. Yeah. So my purpose is to, and there hasn't been notification. SHPD has not been following the rules in notifying who they're supposed to notify. So, originally I had asked for the entire coastline. This time I'm just asking for these very specific kupuna, Ibi kupuna, because we know about them. We know where they are. And our intention as caring ohana and community members is to get them reburied or keep them in place as soon as possible. And to be honest, just because SHPD has jurisdiction over these kupuna, that doesn't mean they're going to move as fast or any faster than we would move, because they don't have the capacity. They don't have the capacity to do it. I mean, Regina Hilo has been really helpful in coming down to the site and with meeting with us. But she's got kuleana. She's got major, major kuleana. And so if I had somebody from SHPD that was specifically assigned to this case, those kupuna be buried already, you know? And so I don't think that's a case to be made that if they're inadvertent, it's going to go any faster, they're going to be treated any better, because the history of SHPD is that, and Regina told me this herself, there's an inadvertent Ibi kupuna that's been in SHPD's care since 1980. So that's unacceptable. So what we've asked for is, can we get all the Ibi kupuna that you have in inventory, and I'm still waiting for a number, bring them all and let's kanu them all one time. There is nobody from SHPD acting actively to come up with any kind of plan that I know of to get these kupuna who are sitting on shelves back into the ground somewhere. We have met with Regina to discuss a potential plan to rebury them. And we're just trying to do everything we can in our power to get these kupuna and to kanu them. Sitting on shelves, they're in storage facilities. So I'm sorry, that argument doesn't work for me, not with these particular burials anyway. And I'm only asking for these three specific burial sites because those are the ones that I know of. And I am intimately familiar with the Ibi kupuna that was washing out on March 10th because I helped Ian.
Well, so, how's this? How about if we work with you to get these Ibi placed back in the ground as soon as possible and have all those protective measures established as soon as possible? I'm not sure if we have the jurisdiction to... I mean, this is the first of my knowledge where a burial council could have a jurisdiction to say that these are previously identified. I'm not sure if that's ever been done in the past. I think they go outside of their power.
The fact that they were not previously identified is a problem for me, because there's so many Ibi kupuna that have come out of that area. And, you know, to be honest, like I said, Regina has been very helpful, very, very helpful. And I'm very grateful to her. But she's overwhelmed with so many other things that for me to you know, the only reference I have is Ko'aiha'o. I've been waiting 11 years to put the kupuna back to rest. And I hate to see one more day go by. And I would appreciate any kind of help that the OIBC can give me. To be honest, I don't care about labels. I care about getting the kupuna back home. So we can call them what we want to call them. They end up on shelves at the end of the day, or they end up in a basement at the end of 11 years. What the hell are we doing? You know? So the bottom line is, can we get them back and canoe them so they can rest at peace? That's my goal. Whatever you want to label them, I'm just thinking that if this area is a known burial site and these kupuna are now previously identified, then more of us will step up to the plate to help with that kuleana. You know, it doesn't have to take months and months and months. It's already taken months and months and months, and nothing's been done. Nothing. Except the community members that have stepped up to the plate and the cultural descent. So I would appreciate any kind of help. I've never done this myself before, but it doesn't make sense that inadvertent discoveries get treated like second-class citizens. And, you know, I don't know if that's the case for everybody, but in this case, you know, we're coming up on 1 year with the 5 EV kupuna that were taken out in October 2020. 3 of them are babies. That's how I got involved in this in the first place. 3 of those are babies. They need to come home. They're an entire different moku. They need to come home and they need to come back to their ohana. And that's where my heart is at. So I'm open to suggestion. I really am.
I have a question to call E. You say this has been going on for a long time, and I know it has been. Community members have been coming forward. Have the community members come up with any ideas as to where to canoe the EV?
Yes. We did meet with Regina Hilo, and there's a proposed plan in place, and I'm still waiting. She's still working on the details.
Actual location.
Yes. A proposed location. But so, it includes getting permission from a landowner and all of that. So, and we have an alternate site just in case, but I'm still waiting to hear about that. But it's in the works.
Well, is the landowner amenable to this?
Well, the last I heard, he wanted to think about it. And, you know, I'll just be honest, you know, the Kaninelu burials are right across the street from Kualoa Ranch. So the landowner is John Morgan. And I haven't heard yay or nay from him. I think Regina is working, you know, and talking story. And it's been over a month since we met with Regina. So I'm hoping he will be open to it. I'm not too sure what it entails, but that is the start of a burial treatment plan. We'd like to keep them as close as possible to where they were buried. And that would be right across the street. It's on the ranch's property. So we got our fingers crossed. We pule for the kupuna, and we hope something comes of it.
Okay, I hear you, and I'm glad that you are starting to get, or you have a handle on the problem. I just got to be honest with you. This did not involve this particular landowner, but we had an experience way back in the 90s where the landowner took 5 years to come up with a positive affirmative response to our request. Mm-hmm. My other two points is the issues here that Kamala has raised are, number one, how do we handle inadvertent discoveries, and how can we anticipate these problems before they come up? I mean, everybody knows that the coastline is where a majority of the EV kupuna are interred. And I think it'd be really helpful if you could take these two ideas back to your OHA committee and see what other ideas people have on this. Because this comes up over and over again, inadvertent discoveries, how do we handle them? How do we define them? How can we anticipate an area like Gonwell is talking about frankly, Kamal, I agree that, you know, if an area has a history of a lot of EV fines, then it should be considered as a previously known burial site. But I don't think the law allows us to do that. And therefore, I think if Mana and his gang could talk about that next month or the month after that, I think it'd be very helpful. Because I know every island burial council has the same issue. They got it.
Yeah, and to further compound that issue, thank you for that, Manao Chuck, is the change from the recommendation of the Attorney General's office, which was where back when I was at SHPD, and I believe you were on the council, Chuck, at the time, when you had a burial treatment, a previously identified burial, and you had a burial treatment plan in place for a particular area, if there were new discoveries in that area, they were treated as previously identified, so you can implement the preservation measures right away. Now it's different. Now, given a project area, if there's a burial treatment plan in place and another burial is discovered in that project, they're treated as an inadvertent discovery.
I know. We discovered, I learned that about a year ago on that project in Waimanalo that Kamuelo was all upset about. I've always assumed that what you just told us, Kamuelo, was correct. Now, I don't know how that got changed. I don't ever recall ever being informed that.
Yeah.
Anyway.
So Kamuelo, it takes away the having, identifying them as previously identified in a way is actually crippling now. Because no matter what, if you give a burial treatment plan, anything else that gets uncovered is still treated as an inadvertent discovery.
Doesn't make sense. That doesn't make sense to me at all. And I think that needs to be challenged.
Yeah. That doesn't AG is still here.
No.
she had left. But yeah, you know that was a call from an AG.
Yeah. So that's an opinion. That's not a law. So what does the law say? You know, everybody can have opinions about this, that, and the other thing. But if at the end of the day, the Kupuna are suffering, what kind of sense does that make? And that's my goal, is to cut down on the suffering. So I don't have answers. I don't have answers to this. I appreciate any kind of kokua anybody can help with. And to be honest, if this, the landowner, you know, is going to take his time to decide what to do or not to do, we do have an alternate site in mind. So I told Regina, I'm not willing to wait 10 years for an answer.
I'm going to try to talk to Regina too. I got it on my list here for a plan of action for the Ka'aava burials.
Okay.
So I will be in touch, Kalai, I promise.
Okay. Thank you. I appreciate it. I do appreciate it. These kupuna need to go home. They do. Sooner than later, please. Because this coast is washing out. It's washing out as we speak. So, mahalo nui.
Mahalo.
May I also add real quick, just to include it in these issues, 2016, the first of those inadvertent burials came up that I found, and it was at the location of the other five burials. It was a full-size adult. And so in consideration, I believe that one's on the shelf with SHPD, and love to see that family get back together because they were all from the same place. Thank you.
All right, mahalo, Ian.
Amen.
That was when, Ian? 2016?
Yeah, 2016. And I believe what happened when I called and waited for the process to happen, CSH actually came out and helped with that. And Regina had mentioned that, yes, that kupuna ended up with her at Shipti. So
still in storage. I mean, still
curated.
Not buried, not Rapano yet.
Yes, okay, so that's why I put that on, wanted to put that on the record so that came, those kupuna came back together.
So even more important, Kamanao, because 2016 was what, 5 years ago?
Where the bus stop.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Crazy. That's ridiculous and unacceptable. So any kokua that anybody can, or any mana'o to help make this right, and we get all of these kupuna, and we can kanu them, better than being on a shelf for another 5 years.
Aye.
Mahalo. Thank you, Ian.
Hololei. Okay, we covered agenda item HI. Leslie, you there?
I'm here, coming out.
All right. For agenda items J through O, those are the inadvertent discoveries, but Regina isn't on the call.
That's correct.
Okay. Well, that said, we've reached the end of our agenda for today. Mahalo to everyone for attending.
Coming out.
All right.
Leslie is on the line. Leslie, can you show that picture? Did you get it?
I didn't. When did you send it?
I just emailed it to you about 20 minutes ago.
Oh.
And I texted it to you too.
Oh.
I just want the council to have a visual of what I'm talking about.
Let me check.
Thank you. But just, if no more, that's okay.
Hello, yeah, I can't get at it. The first computer crashed, and that was the Outlook. Okay. And this one doesn't.
That's okay. Oli pilikia. Okay. Mahalo.
Mahalo.
Okay.
Just for your knowledge, it was an overview of the Kananelu area where the burials were located and potential nearby internment sites. So we can send that to you by email.
Yes, please do. Please do. Mahalo nui. Okay, we've reached the end of our agenda. The next meeting we have is scheduled for September 8, 2021 at 10 a.m. Council members, is there a motion to adjourn?
So I think you have 5 more items on the agenda.
Oh, yeah. Those were supposed to be updates from Regina.
Oh, okay.
It's the inadvertent discoveries, but she couldn't make today's meeting.
Okay, Kalamai.
Okay, move. Is there a second to adjourn?
Second.
We're going to be perpetually here. Okay. All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
All right. Meeting is adjourned. Mahalo, gang, for your attendance today.
Thank you, everyone. I'll see you
on September 8th.
Mahalo. Good to see you guys.
Thank you.
Mahalo.
Likewise. Yeah, Chuck. See you next month.
Bye, Chuck.
Coming out.
All right.
Since you're still on, I was just going to email you. Who motioned to adjourn? Kalamai.
It was Chuck that made the motion.
Good. Okay, good. Yeah. Mahalo. Also, okay. If you could pass along your number to me on email, Brickwood and a few other council members wanted it. Mahalo.
Oh, sure. And then I'll also shoot you my to-do list, and you can check it to see if I left out anything that I have to do for next meeting. Okay.
Mahalo.
Thank you. I'll shoot it to you right now.
Awesome. Mahalo. Okay.
Mahalo.
Manao.
Hi.
Aloha. Hi. Aloha. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I just wanted to, I sent an email. I don't know if you got it about the NAGPRA draft regulations and the Department of Interior consultation meetings.
How long ago did you send it?
Well, I asked Kai for some emails, so it's probably been a couple weeks.
You sent it to me. I'm sorry, I didn't get it.
Okay. I just didn't know if it seems like the Native Hawaiians organizations aren't really aware of it, and there's some changes in the regs that people may want to be aware of.
Sure.
Especially, I guess for me, my concern is the definition of human remains under the new regs.
I hear you. So yeah, my email is WIMILLS. At ksbe.edu.
Okay, WIMILLS.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll send you the information now.
Okay, thank you, Angela.
Okay. Thank you. Bye-bye.
Aloha.
Aloha.